the meeting to order. We're still one shy of a quorum, but we'll get started anyway. Hopefully, our quorum will be here momentarily. There is a quorum.
Mm-hmm.
So you have before you the minutes of our last meeting. What's your pleasure with respect to those minutes?
So moved by Poppy.
Don't need a second. I'm used to being a mayor, you know.
That's,
Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes? If not, all in favor of approving those minutes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. The minutes are approved. The first bill up today is Representative Meslow. Representative Meslow, please come forward with your... Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. You have before you House File 527. Mr. Chair, my request would be that you or a member of the committee move that the bill pass and be referred to the General Register.
I will so move that we recommend to this bill 732 to pass and be sent to the General Register. You may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the correction on that on the bill number. I would suggest, members, that you look to the proposed amendment. That would be 732A1. That's really just a language cleanup to put the bill in the form that I would be looking for. That deletes all of the original new language that I had in the bill. And again, my request would be that the committee approve the amendment at this time.
And I would move the A1 amendment. All in favor of the A1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The bill is now in the form that you wish it to be.
It is. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Very briefly, to let you know what this is about, Section 429.021 of the Minnesota statute provides the authority for local governments to authorize various improvements. The bill before you adds the 20th provision that allows for that. What it does is that it allows local government to enter into agreements with private cooperatives of the electric or communications utilities in order to pay the costs to bury power lines. And you'll hear testimony briefly as to how this has come up in White Bear Lake, where the residents would all like to pay to have the power lines buried so that it improves the view and the appearance of their properties. Right now, there's no provision to allow that to happen. All of the property owners have joined in the request. They've petitioned the city of White Bear Lake to do that. And we're looking for that authority. But rather than say, let's just give the authority to White Bear Lake, it makes sense to extend this across the board. If you look at the proposed amendment, you'll see the reference at the bottom to Section 429.031, Subdivision 3. What that provides is that this kind of an improvement can only be done if all of the residents of the property affected agree to the plan and agree to pay for it, and pay for it entirely. So there is no local government cost. This is the landowners asking the government to take care of this, and then the landowners paying for it themselves. That's what we've got. With having given you that brief description of the bill, I would like to call my testifiers forward, if I may.
Proceed.
And Mr. Costello, David.
Would you please identify yourself for the tape and who you represent as well?
Yes, my name is Scott Costello, and I represent a informal group of neighbors on Joy Avenue in White Bear Lake.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
You may proceed.
Yeah. Our little group has been working with the city to bury the utility lines that run through our neighborhood. 100% of the affected property owners, which is six of us, are prepared to pay 100% of the project cost, letting the city organize the project and assess the entire cost back to us under Minnesota Statute Chapter 429. Now, Chapter 429 actually currently allows the petition for assessment process to be used for, explicitly states it, electrical distribution systems. But we've been advised by our city attorney that the way the statute is worded, it permits it to be used only for electrical systems that are actually owned by the city. Now, since electrical distribution systems are generally owned by electric utilities, not by municipalities, this represents an unfortunate technicality in law that we'd like to see changed. But this is not just about our little project in our little neighborhood. The bill before this committee, I believe, has general usefulness across the state. It provides municipalities with a tool to work with citizens who are prepared to pay the entire cost of improving their neighborhoods. It imposes no mandate on our cities, nor does it open the door for any kind of abuse. The special assessment allowed by this bill can be used only if 100% of the affected property owners petition the city, and the city has the option of accepting or rejecting the petition. The money that the city puts up front for such a project is paid back with interest, so there is no real financial burden to the state or local taxpayers. According to the nonprofit group Scenic America, above-ground utility lines are a major source of visual pollution, up there with billboards, which is this group's other big concern. They report that there are more than 3 million miles of electrical lines, wires, strung across the country, not to mention all the telephone and cable television, or all the telephone and cable television lines that coexist with the electrical lines. Several states do have special assessment laws that can be used to finance the burial of utility lines. California even goes so far as to have a matching fund program to augment the funds raised by special assessment for this specific purpose. But we're not asking for any kind of funding here. This is really the ideal form of environmental legislation because it simply enables cities to work with people who care enough about the issue to put their money where their mouths are. Our neighborhood story will help illustrate why this bill is needed. All of the houses on our side of the street have a lovely view of a pond, with actually a view of White Bear Lake beyond that. And these utility lines are strung across the view, basically draped right in front of our living room picture windows. Underground lines would solve the problem, and they would also address maintenance and tree trimming issues as well. Now, we discovered that getting this project done is no easy matter. We learned what is apparently an old truism, that any project involving multiple neighbors contributing fairly large sums of money almost never gets done. This project would cost about $3,500 per house. Now, $3,500 is not an outrageous price for a home improvement project, but to get six houses in a row that all want to do the same $3,500 home improvement project at the same time is, well, it's like waiting for the planets to line up. I said we've been working on this for 4 years. Two of the six houses were sold during the time, and each time that happened, we had to stop for 6 months. At one point, the stock market dipped, and one of the neighbors said, boy, I just can't afford this now. Finally, we got everyone to agree to go forward if we could finance the main distribution line part of the project, which is about $2,000 of that $3,500, as a special assessment. Now, besides the money issues, we encountered difficulties and complexities in dealing with the utilities involved. The line designers at Xcel Energy are very busy people. And knowing that these kind of projects almost never succeed, they are very hesitant to work with groups of homeowners. In fact, it took months of badgering at our point to get them to come out and look at the site, and then more months of badgering to get them to do the engineering work to give us an estimate. But since the Xcel line people have to have a good working relationship with the city, having the city involved, I think, would help a whole lot here. And in many cases, including ours, there are also cable lines strung on the same poles. And because the cable company has a franchise agreement with the city, we think that it would help a lot to have the city involved in terms of the cable company also. So in conclusion, we are supporting this bill, not only because it would help us out, but because it will provide municipalities across the state with a tool to help them work with their citizens to make possible what is otherwise almost impossible to accomplish, improvement in neighborhoods and communities by burying unsightly utility lines. So thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee, for your time this afternoon, and I ask you for your support in moving this bill forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Members of the committee, have any questions for Mr. Costello, is that it?
Costello.
Costello, I'm sorry. Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Costello? If not, if the other testifier would please identify himself. And
Mr. Chair, my name is Mark Sather. I'm the city manager in White Bear Lake. And in respect to your time, I don't think I can add a lot to what Mr. Costello explained. He really hit the issue on the head for us. Mr. Costello, representing his neighborhood, came to the city, as he explained, with this particular proposal. We thought it was a great idea, but we ran into some problems when we had an opinion from our city attorney that said that it wasn't compliant with the statute right now. And we came up with the idea, perhaps, of seeking some assistance from you. It was at that point we thought that it would be better to consider all the cities of the state rather than just simple special legislation for our community. So we approached the League of Cities, who saw a connection with this, with the work a lot of other cities are doing. White Bear Lake, I see a lot of formerly local elected officials here, and we're one of those communities that is approaching our 125th anniversary as an incorporated city. We've been around for a long time. We're finding a lot of our existing infrastructure is in need of reconstruction. We're reconstructing about 3 miles of road each year in our residential neighborhoods, and along with that comes requests from residents to have sidewalks rebuilt, and in many cases they're looking at the utilities. Unlike a lot of the newer communities and newer subdivisions where everything is placed underground now, they see a beautiful street and sidewalk, and at the end they still have some unsightly overhead cables. As technology has come along, at least some of the first generations, we see now very heavy cable television and cable communication cables, in addition to the phone company and the electric utility and so forth. Many people are interested in getting that place underground until they see the cost and realize as a short-term or immediate payment it's difficult, but it could be accessed over a period of 10 or 15 years as allowed under Chapter 429. It really does add to the value of the neighborhood and the value of the property, and is much more workable. So that's our proposal with this legislation, as we think as it includes the requirement that it must be petitioned, where we have the consent of those who are going to be assessed. 429 provides a procedure for public hearings, the opportunity to challenge it, and generally in our community, as well as most that I know, these projects don't go ahead unless the people want it, but if they do want it, it's a way for government to be working with its residents to improve their neighborhoods. Again, we'd like to ask for your support for this legislation and thank Representative Mezel for assisting us on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. Anyone on the committee have any questions for the witness? If not, Representative...
I have a question for Representative
Mezel. Representative Tamar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So maybe I just want to, Representative Mezel, I just want to make sure I get what you're doing, because I support it, but I support the concept. So, in other words, if you had a neighborhood and the majority of the people in that neighborhood wanted to have the utility improvements underground, what would happen to other neighbors who didn't want that? They'd all be assessed. Is there some formula here? I'm not clear how this all works.
Representative Meswell.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kamar, a majority doesn't do it. It takes unanimous.
Unanimous
decision, so you can't be assessed against your will. Within that assessment, if a particular neighbor felt that he or she was being unfairly assessed in a proportion, there is a procedure under statute where that could be challenged. But no assessment takes place and the project doesn't go forward unless it is unanimous agreement by all of the affected landowners.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Meslow, it says in your delete all amendment, it says, which exceeds the design and construction standards set by law, tariff, or franchise. Is there anything about this project that is going to exceed what's already in statute?
Representative Meslow.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, it otherwise exceeded the authority in the existing statute. If we didn't make a change, the citizens in White Bear, in this neighborhood in White Bear Lake would not be able to go forward with the assessment. And so I think that's what this language gets at, is that it says notwithstanding the other restrictions that were out there, if this agreement was reached by all the affecting landowners and the city, that the project can go forward.
Representative Meslow, municipal utilities are not included in your amendment. Is there a reason for that?
I believe I know the answer, Mr. Chair, but let me make sure I've got it right. They're already covered by the latest statute, right? Mr. Chair, that is already covered by another of the subdivisions under this very same statute. We simply need this to apply to situations where it is not owned by the municipality.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else wish to testify either for or against this bill? Discussion of the bill? Representative Poppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe it is just a clarification again for me. Where does it actually state that it needs to be a unanimous project that is being supported?
Representative Meslow?
Mr. Chair, Representative Poppe, the reference on line 9 to 429.031 subdivision 3 is the statute that addresses the petitions, and within that statute, within that subdivision, it requires unanimous agreement of all of the affected landowners.
Seeing no further discussion of the bill, I will renew my motion that this bill, House File 732, be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register. As amended. Thank you. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Representative Meslow. And
thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Representative Erickson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's been a long month since I last saw you, and if you would be so kind as to place House File 478 in front of the committee for debate.
Representative Erickson, I will move House File 478, and I don't have the list of where it needs to go. Just go to the General Register.
Mr. Chair, I have a delete all amendment, so maybe we'll deal with that motion after the...
I will move that House File 478 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register. And now to get it, the bill in the order that Representative Erickson would like it, I will move the DE7 amendment. That's a delete all amendment, members, and it's simply to get the bill in the order that the author would like it. All those in favor of the DE7 amendment... signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Representative Erickson, to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I probably should have interrupted that motion because I have an oral amendment that I'd like you to offer on lines, on page 1, line 22 and line 23. Delete county engineer and insert county recorder. So actually, we could leave county on line 22. So the deletion of engineer on line 23 becomes recorder. And on page 2, line 31, delete engineer and change to recorder. So I hope, Mr. Chair, you would accept that as a friendly amendment to your amendment that you moved for me.
Representative Erickson, on page 1, line 23, you're changing the word engineer to recorder and doing the same on page 2, line 31.
Correct, Mr. Chair.
All those in favor of that amendment that I now move, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any more?
As I said, it's been 1 month since I last sat in this chair and brought forth some testifiers from Mille Lacs County, Milo Township, to present their dilemma in regard to a survey that was done. Mille Lacs County does not have a full-time county surveyor. So what I have done in the interim is brought together county surveyors from Goodyear County, Carver County, Ramsey County, MUNDA, the Association of Minnesota Counties, many stakeholders, and tried to reach what was bothering me in the language, just in the way the language read, to try to make this a better bill if indeed it's enacted into law. And Deb Dyson has been an excellent resource here, and I think, members, if you look at the bill summary she has provided for the delete all, we have probably one of the finest written summaries of a bill that I've ever come across in my 8 years as a legislator. I also want to publicly thank Tom Pender, too, who worked at least 3 hours with me on this, Deb Dyson also putting in a good hour and a half. So what this does, committee and Mr. Chair, is this delete all amendment would set time limits for land surveyors to file or record certificates that establish the location of corner markers. As you recall, that was a problem in Milo Township, and I foresee as development occurs across Minnesota, this could occur in other townships, in other areas. And, of course, other monuments and markers that are key to surveys. It also provides that if the certificates are not filed within 30 days, then the field notes and other related materials to establishing corner markers must be filed with the county surveyor, or if there's not a full-time county surveyor, with the county recorder and available to the public. As you recall, my constituents were concerned that they never had access to this. If you'd like me to walk through the specific sections, I can do that. But these are actually three changes to three sections of law. So maybe I should point that out to you. In the first part of the delete all amendment, I am amending subdivision 4 of section 160.15 of Minnesota Statutes 2004. And on page 2, amending section 381.12 of Minnesota Statutes 2004. And on the very last page, which is where I actually began with this whole adventure, amending subsection 389.03. We think that we have clarified some concerns that county surveyors have had. And, Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, at this time, I would like to have John Pohl and the county surveyor from Carver County come forth to answer some questions if you have specific questions about the changes that I have suggested. Gentlemen?
That would be just fine. Welcome to the committee. Representative Erickson, is this for questions or do you have more testimony?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think we need to hear from a real-life county surveyor, for one.
Okay.
And also from the lobbyist group that represents private and public surveyors.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record, please.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Tom Pohl with the Meserly & Kramer firm, here on behalf of the Minnesota Society of Professional Surveyors, which is an association of over 500 public and private land surveyors. I wanted to let the committee know this is not our association's bill, and our association has not taken a formal position on it. However, we have tried to work with Representative Erickson. She's worked very diligently on trying to put language together. Our concern is to make sure that the language works in practice for land surveyors. So with that, there has been a couple of concerns from surveyors conveyed, and I wanted to have John Freemeyer, who is the Carver County surveyor, talk a little bit about what those concerns are.
Welcome to the committee, sir. State your name on the record, please, and you may proceed.
My name is John Freemeyer. I'm the Carver County Surveyor, and I'm here in the
capacity of representing the Minnesota Society of Professional Surveyors. It was four surveyors, and all of us were private or public sector surveyors. Assisted Representative Erickson in drafting the language for for this bill. Since we have completed that work, we have had some private sector surveyors express some concerns about some of the language in this bill. Specifically, it would be the requirement to file survey notes in public offices. Many private sector surveyors feel like, because of surveyor-client privileges and stuff, that they feel like they do not want those notes to become public record or filed as a public document. They're certainly in agreement with the filing of the certificate itself, but the notes that support that certificate, there is some private sector surveyors that would not be in favor of a requirement to file notes in a public office. Another issue that a number of surveyors across the state, including the Minnesota Association of County Surveyors, have been discussing for at least 2 years now, is the issue of the electronic data storage of these records. Several full-time county survey offices across the state are maintaining many of these records in electronic format, and we are working right now. That is not in complete compliance with the letter of the law, and we are working on some future legislation that would authorize that electronic method of dealing with this these quarter certificates. We are not prepared to with any exact language at this time, but we do have a study group that is looking into that. We feel like some of these issues could be addressed at the same time that we would the surveyors would be here to discuss the electronic option of records storage here.
Questions? Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question was going to be, so everyone was in agreement, but clearly from the testimony, I've gotten my answer.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hillstrom, well, when we left the last two-hour meeting, we were all in agreement that we were doing the right thing, but then, of course, this is disseminated to the public, and I believe that, Don heard some concerns, and so did Tom, and some emails went by me, but I still think that, number one, the accountability is important here. I know that county surveyors are busy people, but we owe it to our constituents to allow them to see at least the notes, I think, whether they're in electronic format or they are in printed format, within a reasonable time. And we agreed that this was a reasonable time after placing and establishing that marker or monument. So I really felt that we worked hard to reach something that was agreeable. And I think what you're hearing today is that no one's ever going to be satisfied with probably anything that we compromise on in this legislature. And I think I've reached the best possible compromise for these kinds of situations. But, it's in your hands.
Further questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Anderson.
Oop, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erickson, are your testifiers? I've got a couple who I buy my Christmas trees from. And about 4 years ago, the DNR came in and said, the boundary line, which you say is your boundary line, is no longer your boundary line. And they moved the boundary line without really giving any, except the fact that they said that the survey that was done back in the 1800s, because it was their grandmother's or great-grandmother's land that they purchased, the boundary line that was surveyed at that point was not correct or adequate. How do people like just regular Joe Blow, Christmas farmer, inherit land like that, and then all of a sudden the bureaucracy has the wherewithal to come in and change a line, and you lose, it was only 10 feet, but 10 feet of land is a lot when it goes a mile long.
Perhaps, Mr. Chair, I'm Representative Anderson. We could let John Friedmeier answer this, as he is a county surveyor. Would you like to take that, John?
Mr. Friedmeier.
At least, you know, try.
Mr. Friedmeier.
I know you can't give, you know, the final, the DNR.
You're talking about a reasonably complex issue. I will try to simplify it as much as I can. You know, across the state, there is many instances where occupation lines and deed lines and lines as determined by the public land survey markers are not in exact conformity. There is many remedies in law currently where if a deed line and an occupation line were not in conformity, where the landowner would have legal protection or a legal remedy in any case to at least make the argument that what they had been occupying for a number of years was in fact their possession, even though it may not be in conformity with the deed line or lines as determined by the public land survey markers. So, in short order, there is a remedy in law for through the court systems to challenge anybody or any public organization that would come in and purport to say that the land within, say, a set of fences was not yours.
Further discussion.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Anderson. I know that you can file a complaint. That is what my constituent is doing, because, of course, if this is enacted into law, this 478, that's not going to help my constituents. I'm looking to the future to avoid this. But there is a complaint process, and I'm sorry that I didn't bring the letter from my constituent, because he's in the process of doing this. It just came by way of email a few minutes before I came down here. So I know there is a process, and I don't know if Mr. Friedmeier wants to comment on that, but there is something that your constituents can do.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erickson. Mr. Friedmeier, my constituents, because they mentioned it to me, I said, well, did you get an attorney? Did you file? And they said, we did, and we filed a complaint. But the cost of doing this just got to be too expensive. When they were pushing the $20,000 mark to do this, they just said, we can't continue to fight the bureaucracy. And I think it's unfair that a couple who have lived on this land, and actually was in the families for the last, before the 1900s, now have to fight to protect the land that they thought was theirs to begin with, and they went as far as they could financially and then just said they couldn't go any farther. So I'm concerned about the wherewithal of boundary lines and cornerstones and so forth and so on, and when I see families who think that they have land, they lose it because the bureaucracy says the lines weren't properly drawn, I'm concerned.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The question you brought up is the concern is the word notes, the filing of the notes.
Right.
And my question is if a private surveyor did not file notes, that is the essence of the argument, because there's no way to get back to substantiate what went into his decision.
Mm-hmm.
And as a county surveyor, are not your notes of public record that would substantiate your markers?
Mr. Friedmeier.
Yes, sir.
Of course, any notes is prepared by a full-time or part-time county surveyor is public records and is has to be maintained and available for public inspection. There is some private surveyors, not necessarily acting in the capacity of a part-time or full-time county surveyor, reestablishes lost section quarters, and it would be those notes that that sometimes these private sector surveyors do not want to make the notes, put those notes in public records. But if the certificate itself is prepared, in full compliance with this full chapter, this is, you're only seeing a portion of both of these chapters, 160.15 and 381.12. If the quarter certificate is filed in full compliance with both of those laws, it requires the surveyor to fully explain his methodologies and why he established the quarter where he did. So in most cases, I would say, even as a surveyor that's worked in both, you know, private and public sector, in most cases, those quarter certificates should stand on their own.
Gibson Peterson. I.e., that certificate would have, quote, notes with it.
Mr. Freeman.
The certificate, you know, does contain a abstract summary of the surveyor's conclusions in arriving at the quarter position, and the certificate by law does have to be either filed in the county surveyor's office or recorded in a county recorder's office.
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just thinking for the author, maybe your statement should be certificate notes. I mean, I think we're getting, it sounds to me like we're getting into an interpretation of terms, and I think it sounds to me like they're saying the same thing, but yet the objection from the surveyor and the private sector, I do not see it as an impassioned objection, so maybe it's, or is it?
Mr. Chair and Representative Peterson, just give us a moment to ponder this. We think you're moving us in the right direction, and if you would be so kind, as on page 1, line 18,
and line 22.
Do you intend to strike survey notes and change it to certificate notes or copy of the notes that accompany a certificate? Mr. Peterson, or Representative Peterson, what do you think would
be? I'm not sure. I'm just suggesting that the surveyor is testifying that there's a certificate recorded, and with that certificate are the notes that support that decision.
Mr. Chair, I think I need Ms. Dyson to weigh in on this. As you recall our discussion, and maybe this is out of order, I'm not sure, but Mr. Chair, and Ms. Dyson, I think my constituent was rather adamant about survey notes. That is, committee, what he showed you. He did not, illustrate for you any other kind of note that I remember. Ms. Dyson, do you need any input here? No, if you're grimacing, I don't want you to say anything. I don't ask nonpartisans to do that, but I'm just trying to make my point about my constituent, but I will also defer to the experts here.
Mr. Chair, members, I think it's something to consider. When a private surveyor is acting as a public surveyor, if it's a part-time surveyor, if the county doesn't have a full-time surveyor, or if there's a full-time county surveyor, anything they do is public and is filed with either the county surveyor or with another county body. So I think I want to make sure that's clear. I think the problem is, as Representative Peterson was alluding to, is that when a private surveyor acting as a private surveyor is doing either a survey or a corner certificate, that information could then become public under this legislation. I think it would be, and that is where the private surveyors have a concern about their intellectual property, so to speak.
Mr. Poole, is that only an issue, though, when those surveys are actually certified?
I don't know.
I mean, I'm tracking with Representative Peterson, I think, and I'm wondering if his suggestion isn't good. If that's the only time in the various situations where in this process there occurs this issue of reporting and having information in record, if it's at the point of certification, that the survey gains the proper credibility and legality and so forth, it seems to make sense that we identify the notes that establish the certification of that survey. And that actually might mitigate the private surveyor's concern, because if I understand it right, and I'm asking this, if I understand it right, if we put the words certified certification in there, it seems to me that that would then mean that those notes for a private survey that were not certified with the county would still be private. But once they certify it, they have to submit it to certify it, and those would be public. Is that correct? Mr. Freemeyer.
I believe the concept of adding this part about the survey notes into this bill in the first place was because of the surveyors would be allowed that flexibility of 1 year to get the actual certificate filed. And from that standpoint, I say that insertion makes perfect sense. But there is a number of private sector surveyors out there that do reestablish the section corners. They are not full-time or part-time county surveyors. They are only acting as a private sector surveyor representing a private individual. And many of the private surveyors, you know, feel like that they have a surveyor client, you know, privilege there, that those their notes do not have to become public. As far as their certification on their survey drawings themselves, one of the unique problems in the state of Minnesota is typically the certified survey drawing is not a recordable instrument. There is some counties that do require that they be filed with the county surveyor, but it's, you know, there is not a blanket requirement to record the actual a survey drawing or the certification from the surveyor relating to that survey, the complete boundary survey, in a office like the county recorder's office.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chair, and committee, I'm pondering something that Mr. Pohl is asking Mr. Freemeyer about this. You know, and I'm not learned in this area, so this has really been a steep learning curve for me. Everybody needs to know that. But I'm wondering if we shouldn't exempt private surveyors who are performing private surveys, and maybe the language could be more succinct. But Mr. Freemeyer, can you help me out?
Mr. Freemeyer.
Well, that would certainly address the concern of the private sector surveyors, but I guess another way of potentially addressing the language in the legislation would be to say, you know, the survey notes, of those in the capacity of county surveyor, or something to that extent, but I'm not sure that language in that case would really even be necessary in the first place, then, because all part-time and county surveyors in this state know right now that their records have to be public. So they of course, I guess in this case the legislation is telling us then that we have to place that in the office of the county surveyor or the county recorder.
Representative Erickson, I understand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that if it meets the committee's approval, that we move this bill to the general register, and that if I need to further amend it, provided it moves in the Senate, that we would work out some changes if necessary. I'm taking too much of your time, and I know how valuable that is. I really would like to move on, and we can't be sitting here amending, and I apologize.
Yep, I understand, Representative. I was just going to comment that I understand how you can do good work with a working group, and once you release your work, you suddenly find out that you may not have agreement, and that happens. But Representative Erickson, if you'd like to keep this work here, We're coming back later today, and we could just lay this over till later today. And you keep shaking your head the more I talk, but Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, I'm falling into that old adage, is he who talks the most absolutely knows the least. And I'm just it's so confused. I think we should just pass it. I think we should pass this bill, let it get out on the street, and if it has to be challenged, it'll come back someday with another surveyor 20 years from now. But it just seems to me that if a private surveyor is working in some capacity that impacts the public record,
mm-hmm.
those notes probably aren't that proprietary. So I just suggest we pass it and get on with it.
Any other discussion? Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am not learned in this area either, but it is this committee's job mm-hmm. to fix issues as they arise, and I'm not in favor of just passing on legislation that fix a problem that I can't even describe or figure out. And so I would either, you know, encourage you to pass only the sections you have agreement on or leave it here until it is fixed, and otherwise I'll be voting against it.
Well, Mr. Chair, in the Senate and committee, in the Senate, I think this will have it's fixed, so what? You know, it's not been heard yet in the Senate, and Senator Wergen is waiting for me to send over the language, and then I think because she's more learned than I, she's probably going to fix it, and that's all I can say, because she's a former county commissioner and knows this pretty well. But I happen to be the one who got the first hearing.
Further discussion. Representative Schroen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm comfortable with passing this on to the General Register. Voting here today does not cause it to be law, and mm-hmm. We've done this with several other bills, both in this committee and other committees, knowing that there was some tweaking going to happen either in the next committee or quite possibly before we speak to it on the floor. So I'm comfortable passing this bill today.
Representative Schroen, that does happen around here quite often.
Yeah.
This is a very complicated issue, and I'm kind of intrigued by it. The one thing I don't want to be supporting anything that causes any more problems between the Hatfields and the McCoys.
Mr. Chair.
And that's kind of the history of this.
Yeah.
So, Representative Erickson.
It's likely that I would take up the Senate file if Senator Wergen is able to work out the kinks. I would not move my House file forward.
I'm concerned about it. I think you've made good progress. I have no problems working on it later. I don't think anybody else does either. But if you want it to move along, I will. If there's no further discussion, any additional testimony for or against the bill? Thank you. If there's no further discussion, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Typically, when a bill has work that still needs to be done, we pass it on when it's going to another committee. I don't typically recall that it gets passed to the General Register when people agree that there's work to still be done.
Good point, Representative Hillstrom. Representative Erickson, you still want to move on, or we're back here tonight? Representative Lancheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My experience with Representative Erickson has been is that she's an intelligent, thoughtful legislator who can figure this out. And I guess I would just encourage you, Representative Erickson, to meet with Mr. Poole, and since we're coming back, see what you can do, because I have to say I share that concern. Going to the General Register when we already know there's a problem is usually not a conducive way to do good public policy, but I know that Representative Erickson can probably get it done fairly quickly, and because my inclination is, and I don't want to do this, Representative Erickson, but my inclination is to vote no as well, because we don't, and you know that. I mean, you've been here longer than I. We usually don't push them to the General Register if there's... I'm just looking at faces, and I think a bunch of people are getting ready to vote no. So, I mean, that's what I would encourage you to think about here for a minute.
Well, Mr. Chair, the problem is we don't know if there is a problem, because we're always going to have people that disagree. And, you know, I don't know. I'll defer to Mr. Paul.
Mr. Chair and members, I think it would be helpful to have the private surveyor acting as a private individual language included in there. I think that would be helpful, and it would eliminate the confusion about whether or not those notes or records are public.
So, Mr. Chair, I guess we'll lay it over once more. I'm sorry about that. And I'll work with Mr. Pohl, and we'll see what language we can get fixed up. And do you require a 24-hour...
Mm-hmm.
Representative Erickson,
this is something the committee has the good questions today, and the committee has brought up this concern, and I see no heads shaking, so I think everyone's amenable to address this later today.
Thank you very much.
So the bill will be held over for later discussion. Discussion later today. Okay, because of conflict with another committee, the next one on the agenda will be Representative Markowitz, House File 1258. I understand this goes to the General Register. Representative Markowitz moves that House File 1258 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register. Representative Markowitz, welcome to the committee again.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members, and I'm going to go along with Representative Peterson's advice, but those who speak the longest, so I will try to keep this short. What House File 1258 will do is give cities more flexibility on how to charge or fund for mosquito abatement. And right now, under current law, local governments can pay for mosquito abatement with a property tax revenues. And what this would allow, this bill, is to allow cities, local governments, to put those or charge fees. So you could put it on like a utility billing and so forth. Now, already cities have authority to put fees on their utilities. For example, the inflow and infiltration prevention program or storm sewer fee is one they can already do under statute 471.476. Cities can also under 3.342. Under 471.476, they may also charge for ambulance service. And as many of you know, since 1992, cities have placed on your utility billing a $5.21 service charge for the from the Minnesota Department of Health, which dealt with the Safe Drinking Water Act. So there is some precedence for doing that. Why? What's the reason? In these tighter budget times, it would be nicer for cities to have more flexibility. State statute that deals with mosquito abatement talks about mosquitoes being a public nuisance. I think with West Nile now, it's no longer just a public nuisance, but a public safety, public health issue. This would provide a more stable funding source, more flexibility, and also, maybe more important, have all benefited properties, those who benefit from the mosquito abatement, paying for that. One last thing I'd like to say is that this no way, shape, or form changes any of Chapter 18G.14. You still would have to establish a mosquito abatement board. And also, any dollars you raise on this fee must go into a mosquito abatement fund and could not be used for any other purposes. So all those portions of the law remain the same. So, Mr. Chair, I'll stand for questions.
Any discussion to the bill? Anybody to testify for or against the bill? Seeing no discussion, Representative Markowitz removes his motion that House File 1258 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The bill is passed and be sent to the General Register.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Markowitz. Is Biscuits here yet? Is Representative Biscuits in the room yet? No? Okay. So, Representative Wealthy, House File 1287. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the committee, Representative Wealthy. I understand your bill needs to go to public safety, is that correct?
I guess that would be at the discretion of the chair and the members in the committee.
Well, my note here is that committee administrator Public safety requested
public
the bill.
Safety.
Okay. Did you have someone to...
I'll make the motion.
Representative Hosh.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move for the passage of the bill.
Representative Hosh moves House File 1287 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Public Safety Committee.
Thank you, Representative Hosh, and thank you, Mr. Chair. Also, I want to point out that we do have an author's amendment. Do you have a copy of that in front of you? You do. Okay. Well, in order to move this along in the form that we would intend it to be in, I would appreciate if we could incorporate that author's amendment now.
Representative Hosh?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to include the A5 amendment in for passage.
Representative Hosh, is that the 805-0175?
Correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Hosh moves to get the bill in order, in the order the author would like it. Representative Hosh moves the A05 amendment. It's a one-page amendment. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Welty, to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members. I would hope that my bill would go as quickly as Representative Marquardt's went, but I just don't think I'm going to be able to do that. That was good time. First of all, I just want to walk you through what the amendment was about. We wanted to really open this up so that in case a city or in case an entity outside of the county seat or anywhere else in the county was thinking of building or offering a proposal to the county commissioners, if it was outside of the city limits at the time that they were making the proposal, or if their proposal included land that was going to be built upon outside the city limits, that we would not have to come back to the legislature for another piece of special legislation. So we just wanted to clarify that and open that up. And then also, we just wanted to make sure that it says that we will authorize the construction of a jail or criminal justice center outside the city of Wabasha to replace the current jail located in the city of Wabasha. And the reason being is that we didn't want it to necessarily be specific to the levy. And members, why this comes before you is statute 373.05 states that each county shall provide at the county seat a suitable courthouse, a suitable and sufficient jail, and other necessary buildings. Statute 641.24 states that by resolution of the county board, a county may enter into a lease agreement with a city situated in the county, whereby the city will construct a jail or other law enforcement facilities for the county sheriff and other law enforcement agencies. As one reads these statutes, questions begin to arise as to the intent and potential conflict of these statutes. For this reason, I have drafted House File 1287, which is a local government bill, and it's at the request of the county commissioners here today that will be testifying in favor of it. I want to make it very clear to the members of the committee and to the opposition that is here today and to the residents of Wabasha County that this legislation leaves the final decision-making ability up to the Wabasha County commissioners. The language of the bill will allow the county commissioners to authorize the construction of a jail and criminal justice center outside the county seat if the commissioners choose to replace the current jail and criminal justice center with the one that's built out, with one that's built outside the county seat. I want to make it clear that House File 1287 does not change the county seat. The jail may remain in the city of Wabasha if the county commissioners determine that this is the best location and most cost-efficient and effective option for the residents of Wabasha County. This legislation allows the county commissioners to have the option to explore all of the potential sites and proposals for the construction of a jail and criminal justice center. All of the administrative offices will remain in the city of Wabasha. Granting this authority is in the best interest of the taxpayers of Wabasha County. I want to acknowledge the people who are here in opposition to the bill. I want to thank them for taking the time to participate in the legislative process. If this legislation is passed, I would encourage them to get involved in the planning and decision-making process of where the jail should be built in Wabasha County. I believe that their presence here today emphasizes the need for this piece of legislation because it sheds light on the fact that that we here in the state have two or more conflicting statutes that do not make it clear as to where and under what circumstances a jail may be built outside of the county seat. Under these statutes, if a county commissioner chooses to look outside of the county seat for an option to build a jail and criminal justice center, the matter could be taken to the courts. Both parties would spend unnecessary time and money to clarify the intent of statutes 373.05 and 641.24. Members, those in opposition could take this matter to the courts to decide, but we do not want to see taxpayer dollars used for attorney fees and other unnecessary expenses at this point. I do want to give you a couple examples of currently what has taken place and where jails are located. I do not know of a case where a city outside of the county seat constructed a jail and criminal justice center to replace an existing jail, and that's what this would do. And the county commissioners will come up here to testify as to why we're looking at that option currently. The lease agreements authorized in Statute 641.21 were entered into so that a city could build an additional jail for the county or for a regional jail for two or more counties. That's currently what we've seen as I look through the examples that we have right now in the state. In McLeod County, the offices were temporarily relocated outside of the county seat during the construction of new offices. Special legislation was passed to allow the county to house those offices outside of the county seat. In Pine County, the county commissioners explored the options to move the jail and judicial center. They requested a written legal opinion from the Attorney General's office. What the Attorney General stated was, and this is the question that was posed by the Pine County Attorney, can the county board locate a detention facility outside the county seat? Or can it have such a facility in addition to the county jail, which is required to be at the county seat? I think this specifically addresses what my question is right now to you and this piece of legislation. The Attorney General released the following statement. The county board is expressly required to provide a suitable and sufficient jail at the county seat. Accordingly, absent of some direct or contrary or additional statutory authority, the board is not empowered to provide other or additional jail facilities. And that is why we are here. We are here to seek that additional statutory authority. I believe that these examples prove the need for the passage of this legislation. I want to bring to your attention a few other points that may arise if the legislation is not passed. Does Statute 641.24 allow for a leased jail to be the only jail within the county? Statute 641.24 doesn't state whether the leased jail could replace the existing jail within the county seat. Therefore, Statute 373.05, which states that the county seat must have a jail, could be used to challenge the replacement proposal that we're here before you with today. And then there are a couple other points I just want to review. The Attorney General could provide a written legal opinion, which would most likely be along the same lines as what I read to you before, but it would not be binding in court, nor stop the legal action from being taken. And that's what we're trying to avoid here today. This bill is about the process. And I just want to make it very clear that Wabasha, the city of Wabasha, the city of Lake City, the city of Plainview, or any other city within the county seat could come forward with a proposal. They would all receive recognition by the county commissioners, and this is really a local option. This is a common sense local bill that we're proposing here today. We do have letters of support, and they should have been passed out to you. There's a resolution from the Wabasha County Board of Commissioners. The Wabasha County Commissioners voted 4-1 in favor of the resolution that's backing this bill. Also, the city of Plainview has come forward with a proposal and a resolution. Now, I'll call upon two of the county commissioners from Wabasha County, County Commissioner Dave Harms, and County Commissioner and also Board Chair Dave Windhorst.
Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
state your name for the record, please.
David Harms.
And you may proceed.
In early 2004, we received a letter from the Department of Corrections that indicated our jail would be closed in October of 2007. That's relatively a short time frame for the planning and construction of a jail facility. We have let bids for a request for qualifications for a study, a need study to be done, and that is underway. And we do have a trip on the books to the jail planning school in Longmont, Colorado from April 11th through the 14th. The Wabasha County Board, by a vote of 4-1, passed the resolution that you have before you, requesting the option to consider the construction of a jail at a site other than the county seat. No specific site has been picked at this time. The reason for the resolution is an effort to affect the best possible price for land or the availability of services to accommodate a new facility while not compromising the quality of law enforcement and public safety that is needed in our county. We're a county of approximately 22,000 people. We don't have a large industrial base, and a facility of any size is going to be a heavy tax burden on the people of the county. This resolution certainly does not include exclude the city of Wabasha, but we as the county commissioners are tasked with the responsibility to make the best deal that we can do for the taxpayers. And for that reason, we pass the resolution that you have. We have three cities that could possibly be considered for sites that have the necessary infrastructure to meet the needs of a facility. Two of them, one of them was where the jail currently exists. The other one is Lake City, the area that I represent. That is not really strongly interested for financial reasons at this time. But because of the relatively short time frame, we thought it was necessary to bring this forward to this legislative session to ensure that there wouldn't be further delays in getting something passed because of the Department of Corrections constraints that we're up against.
Questions? Representative Hillstrom? Okay. Additional testimony? Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record, please, and you may proceed.
David Windhorst, Wabasha County Commissioner. As Mr. Harms was stating, we went about this in a proactive manner. We're going to be up against time constraints that are going to be quite insurmountable, I think, at times if we have to come back. There was no intent here or anything else to spite anybody. The city of Wabasha has been a very good host. The jail system that we have was built, second oldest jail in the state of Minnesota. So it was built considerably, 100 years, 125, somewhere in there. When we come back to put a new structure in that same location, I am terribly scared that we are not going to have room enough. And when we don't have room enough, we're either going to have to close streets down or condemnation of homes, something on that sort. The idea of this legislation is so that we can look at moving maybe just outside the city limits, someplace where we have property available, where we can buy enough property to put up a jail, the court services part of it, the impound lot, this sort of thing. I urge you to look at this. All we are asking for is an option to give the citizens of Wabasha County the best possible shot that we can give them. Thank you.
Representative Sharon.
Commissioner, thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, what part of Wabasha County do you represent?
I represent the center of Wabasha County, neither Wabasha, North Plainview, nor Lake City.
Okay, thank you.
And other questions? Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, Commissioners, did you ever take any surveys of the residents in the papers or cards or note cards or anything to see how they felt, the voters that are affected by this? Or do you have differing opinions between the fors and against how many percentage of the people is behind it and how many for it or against it?
Commissioner Harms.
I have not taken any formal survey, sir, but of the people that I've talked to, which is quite a number in the city of Lake City area, there is a recognized need for the county to do something, but there, at the same time that there is that recognized need, there is an urging that we go forth in a very frugal manner or cost-efficient manner.
Representative Cornish.
You're aware of the course of the Department of Corrections is infamous for giving variances and exceptions from their regulations. If you approach them about getting more time, or they say this is it, if you don't build, you ship all your prisons out to other counties, or how's that going?
Commissioner Windhorst.
I will try to handle that. We are aware that they would be receptive to us asking for an extension if we were in the planning stage, if we had an architect in hand, if we were going to do something. Right now we are in the very early planning stages. We would like the opportunity to look at all sites before we... When we do the site study, we will hire a cost analysis done by an independent firm. Anything that doesn't pan out is going to be eliminated.
Thank you.
Mr.
Chair. Questions?
Mr.
Chair. Walty.
Were all of you provided with a copy of the handout from First National Bank with a letter of support? Do you have that in front of you?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And I just want to make a couple points, and that kind of goes back to your question, and that is, when we take a look at this, we weren't under the short time span that we are right now, I think that the county commissioners would have wanted to come forward to look at all options within the county. And when we move forward with this, like I stated before, and like I think we made very clear, this is not picking out a specific site. This is just allowing us to continue the process and to get back to what the voters think. I think that's where we go when we do approve this legislation, and if there are other proposals out there. I think we need to know of the other proposals to be able to go to the voters and say, these are the proposals, which would you favor, which ones would you like us to support? And I think that this is just a continuation of the process so that we can look at all options in Wabasha County. They have been very fiscally efficient in Wabasha County. The jail has been there since it's the first jail built in Wabasha County. Still have that jail. And now we're looking at having to build a new one because the Department of Corrections is ordering the other one closed. So we have been very efficient with our funds. But I just want to point out, in his letter, in President Dean Harrington's letter, he states that a logical process for the County of Wabasha to use for the development of a law enforcement center would seem to be, and then he outlines those criteria. And I think that when we move forward, that the county commissioners will take those points into consideration. They will, I place my trust in them, to use their best judgment to come up with an option that is the best option for the residents, no matter if it's taking into consideration how much we spend, the logistics, where it's located, travel, or anything else that we have to look at.
Further discussion. Representative Hilty.
Thank you,
Thank
you, Mr. Chair. I actually serve on the Public Safety Committee as well. And one of the challenges that we had is making sure that we have a place to adequately house the prisoners, that we continue to grow as we continue to introduce legislation to make more and more items a crime. And we look for innovative ways or people to do innovative things to make sure that we do address incarceration in the long run. And I think this is a really great approach that you're taking. I commend you for bringing this forward, and I think it's a nice bill. Thanks.
Representative Laney.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I assume that your courthouse in Wabasha County is in Wabasha. If that's the case, and I certainly understand how you'd want to keep your options open in terms of location, but have you considered the cost implications, both in terms of direct dollar resources, also staff time, and having to transport prisoners from another community to your courthouse and back and forth, and the security concerns that would be associated with that?
Commissioner Harms.
We've had some discussion about that, not any in-depth studies yet, And we do recognize that should the location change, that there would be some costs incurred. However, there's some security issues right now that are security issues, whether they're a prisoner would be getting out of a car, having been transported from somewhere else, or walking across the parking lot for approximately a half a block to the courtrooms. So some of those things are concerns and will probably continue to be concerns unless a public safety center addressed courtrooms along with some of the law enforcement offices that have been discussed.
Representative Lane.
Mr. Chairman, well, it just seems to me that those implications, cost implications, resource implications of locating a jail any distance at all from your courthouse are really limiting your options, it seems to me. And I don't know how you could be efficiently moving prisoners from another community to Wabasha, moving from a jail in another community to your courthouse. That just seems to me to be a very costly thing to do.
Commissioner Whithorst.
If I could address that, sir. I think we realize that too, and that's part of the idea of the cost study. It will show them things when we do it. My personal thought is I would like to have the option to move outside the city limits of Wabasha is how I try to term it, because I think we do have to have the property. At that point, we're not going, in all likelihood, to be talking a great deal of distance.
Thank you. Further discussion. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Welty, Commissioners. Does the city of Wabasha have the ability to look at land with outside the surrounding city limits right now as far as the opportunity to purchase or to make available or that would be in close proximity to the courthouse that's located in the city of Wabasha?
We have not.
Mr. Windhorst.
Excuse me. We have not got in the direct conversation with them yet. We were under a time constraint, we thought, and we wanted to move this ahead. My personal perspective on this is this will all be coming to a conclusion in late fall, and that will be the time that we will be discussing it. But at that time, you are no longer in session, and if we do need something, it's no longer available until the next session. Thank you.
Representative Lanchesky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just asking Ms. Dyson a question. I, quite frankly, am not understanding what's going on here. And let me just tell you why.
Welcome to the committee, Representative.
Yeah. That's the Minnesota legislature, isn't it? Representative Welty is asking for something that I'm just sitting here thinking the metro already exists, and I don't know why we wouldn't give any outstate county the same benefit. And maybe I'm wrong, and I understand the researchers for the Public Safety Committee are in the room, and maybe they know, but here's how I think about the county in which I reside. We've got a bunch of jails, and they're not all in the county seat. My city has a jail. Most of the cities around me have a jail, and yet the Hennepin County seat is downtown Minneapolis, but Talisville has a jail. So I'm confused. I'm looking at Representative Paymar. I think the county of Ramsey has all kinds of jails, so why does outstate Minnesota get treated any differently? I'm not missing something here.
Representative Lanchesky, I'm going to interject just because you're okay. Going down the path of my questions that I was reserved to the end. Maybe the answer is in this question. I understand this county has about 20, if I remember right, was about 20,000 in population. What's the population of your county? Do you know that? Representative Lanchesky.
I think it's 1.2 million, I think.
Well, it may well be that it's perfectly feasible to have the main courthouse with services for criminal justice and have all of these different areas where you have jails because your population density is so much higher.
Right.
And Representative Lanning's question was really to the fact that, if I understood correctly, that in this case, we have only 20,000 people, and the actual center operations is part of it is being moved. And my question, if I may piggyback yours, is Representative Welty, if I understand this correctly, this is the first time in the state we're basically by this bill going to establish that these current statutes will authorize the separation of these services, which are in law to be kept in one community, or specifically at the county seat. The only other time that's occurred, as I understand it, and was identified in your testimony, was for purposes of even greater sparsity for joint county operations. Is that correct, Representative Welty?
Well, that is correct. I also acknowledge Ms. Pierce. She is here to, she's within house research. She has looked into this issue, and she has some background knowledge as to where we've gone in the past. To address your question, there are a number of counties within the metro area that have either kept their primary judicial center within the county seat, and then they have satellite jails, or they have satellite courthouses or judicial centers around the county for those larger districts. And I'll turn it over to Ms. Perius.
For the record, my name is Rebecca Perius. I'm an analyst in House Research. Mr. Chair and members, I think what you're what the question is addressing is this the first time that the legislature has allowed a county to build a jail outside the county seat? And Representative had mentioned that there are jails around her county that are not located within the county seat, and that is because those counties already have special dispensation from the legislature to place their jails outside the county seat. For instance, Ramsey County has a section under 383A.08 that allows it to maintain detention facilities, workhouses, work farms, and it doesn't specifically say that it has to be in the county seat. Also in St. Louis County, I believe, the legislature has authorized the cities of Hibbing and Virginia to have jails in their counties, but I believe in that county, Duluth also has a jail. And that is the county seat. And as Representative Welty was discussing before, McLeod County has had special legislation which allowed it to temporarily move certain county offices outside the county seat. So this has been done before.
I'm curious. In all the cases you mentioned,
mm-hmm.
are there not also, haven't they also retained jail service, criminal justice service at the county seat? And aren't those all satellites? Mm-hmm. My understanding of this is we're talking about moving the entire, all the services out of the county, out of the jurisdiction of the county seat.
Mr. Chair, you are correct. In those cases, they did maintain it in the county seat. There is one other example where the legislature has enacted a statute which inevitably ended up taking jails outside the county seat. And that is the legislation you were referring to where they have a regional jail.
Mm-hmm.
And so two or more counties are working together
mm-hmm.
To provide one jail, and in effect, one or more of the counties would not have a jail in the county seat. So that would be one exception where it wasn't replaced, but there isn't a jail in the county seat.
And Ms. Pierce, in those cases, was it not done because of sparsity of population?
Mr. Chair, with respect to the regional jails?
Yes.
Yes, I believe so.
So, Representative Lencheski, I was not meaning to get around your question because I felt the same concerns, and I wanted to clarify the record because, Representative Welty, the concern I've felt about your bill is that which others have already stated, and that is if we're going to do this, why aren't we doing it for everybody? Mm-hmm. If this is warranted, now, it seems clear to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, we're creating a situation that has not yet been done. Yes, there are other counties with jail services out from the county seat. But this is the first time there won't be any left in the county seat. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, you're correct.
Okay. So this is a new step, and I think that's important for the committee to consider, because with that, I think we really need to consider whether or not we should be looking at making sure everybody's treated the same way, if it's warranted.
Mr. Chair, I recognize that, and I thought about that in the beginning when we were drafting the legislation. But I thought that maybe we'd get into a very lengthy debate. There are a number of other conflicting statutes I think that we may have to address if we move down that route. And I'm wondering, so then I thought, instead of really getting into a statewide debate about this, maybe we should keep it to the county. And I'd be more than happy to come back next year with legislation if you want me to address this to make it statewide. But the other issue I'll bring up is this, is that, you know, we brought up that what if Wabasha in the city, they decide within the city limits they do not have the space, but they decide that outside the city limits, which is probably a mile and a half from the courthouse, they want to build the county or build the jail and criminal justice center there, or just build the jail there. Hmm. We may have to come back to get that authorization. And by passing this, we'd have that authorization and we wouldn't have to come back. And we are under tight time constraints. Although, you know, what point was brought up before, maybe the DLC will give us a little leeway on the time.
Mr. Chair,
Winchester.
And you weren't, you and I were thinking alike, and I understand the quandary that Representative Welty is in, and we could look at this as a pilot project, I guess, if we wanted to do this one. I just think, you know, I listen to all these bills we always do, and I think we all like to believe we're for local control, and then when we hear bills, we actually aren't. And this is a local control issue. And so, you know, I think it's worth taking a shot at letting them try it. I understand the way you've outlined that it's actually the original jail is going away, but who knows in the future if they'll need to go back to that site, and that'll be a satellite, a little one. Some of it's terminology. I mean, I guess no one in my community thinks of its jail as a satellite. You know, it's a jail. You know, I don't have the right answer, but I understand your concern. I think Representative Welty has raised a timing issue that is problematic for his community.
Mr. Chairman, I know we have other testifiers who've driven up here. If we could...
Okay. We have a long list of questioners here. There are others who've driven up to testify on the bill. Mm-hmm. If we could... Three? Okay. Thank you, Representative Garofalo. We'll do the best we can. If nobody that's on the list has objection, we'll have you folks come to the table and do the best we can with taking questions. But if you folks would stay on deck, we'd appreciate that. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon.
State your name for the record, and you may proceed.
My name is Peter Kloss. I'm mayor of Wabasha, and I brought with me today Catherine Gallenberger, who is a city council person. She's sitting in the back here. Our city administrator is here. His name is David Schmidt, and Pete Reister is our representative from the county. I hope that you all have all received a packet of material that demonstrates what we have done in the past, what the future plans can be, that we clearly have enough room to build a jail. But rather than go through it, we want to make a short presentation for you. And my very gifted and able city administrator, this is kind of nice for me, I can turn it over to him, and he's planning to go through that with you. And we're all available here to answer any questions that you may have. So thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to participate in this.
Mr. Chairman, Committee, David Schmidt, City Administrator, we're in the uncomfortable position to oppose House File 1287. What we tried to do to just save you some time, we put together a packet indicating essentially the areas in which we feel that state law already currently deals with this situation. We believe there is a process by which should the jail decide to move outside the county seat, already in state law 373.05, there's a process by which that can take place. In my packet, page 5, we have a It's an email from the judge from Wabasha County, actually to the Senate side, sharing his concern that was expressed by the committee, essentially the idea of removing the jail from the court services, and his concern about overall efficiencies of that process, the back and forth, the transportation, the overall cost inefficiencies in that, along with just the inefficiencies of running the court system. We have one judge in Wabasha County, very different than some of the metro areas, which obviously were 20,000 people. We're a much smaller area. The city of Wabasha made an effort all the way back, as soon as we heard about this, back in August 10th, to come up with a resolution that was presented to the county commissioners that offered assistance and offered land. And we followed that up again with a further resolution on February 1st. We understand that land was the issue. We went to Goodhue County, which was a much larger jail system than Wabasha County will ever need. The blue imprint on the 50,000 square foot footprint, that indicates the same size as already currently set aside in Goodhue County. That's the footprint for that jail system. That would fit on the site as currently laid out. The footprint of the jail that was more likely to be built in the Wabasha County is the green footprint. The city of Wabasha has already indicated that it would vacate the streets necessary and offer the parkland behind to make this project work in Wabasha. I guess where we find ourselves is in the awkward position that we're trying to work with the county, we're trying to offer the land necessary, the funding packages necessary to make this a cost-efficient operation. And we've worked with Representative Welty trying to communicate our position, and I don't want to take too much more of your time.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Schmidt? Representative Peterson.
I understand public policy that it's really easy intellectually to go out and build a new building on a new piece of dirt, because there's efficiencies with that. But in that scenario, what happens to a facility that you've taken care of for 100 years? Is it throwaway? And if they were, Mr. Mayor, how would they restore this building that has been part of your community all these years? I mean, does that fit into the scenario? Because retrofitting and demolition is a very significant cost, and you'll have that cost whether they move the new dirt or not.
The
Mayor Klaus.
Thank you. The proposal would be, at least this is a thought, is that we could continue to use the old jail until the new one is built, because the new jail would be attached to the courthouse, and we then would probably demolish the old jail. Now, of the historical and significant value of the building, it was unique and a well-planned building at the time, but about 40 years ago or so, it used up its usefulness. And I think it's also important for all of you to know that our county commissioners, our current county commissioners, are not responsible for this situation. They inherited it. It's something that should have been taken care of a long time ago. It's one of those things. But we think that this proposal that we presented here, possible proposal, certainly makes a lot of sense. We can use the old jail when we've got the new one built. I had the privilege of working for the Wabasha County Sheriff's Department after I retired as a school administrator for the past 5 years, and I since resigned about a year ago because I didn't want any conflict of interest here, but I do know a little bit about the court system. We have a wonderful judge, and it's absolutely essential to have your jail as close to the courtroom as possible. I mean, it just makes sense. It's done that way in Olmsted County and Rochester, Nobles County and Worthington, and it just makes sense to have it as close to the actual courtroom as possible. So this plan that we've presented here and shared with you is just a plan. It's not been approved by anyone, but I just want to go on record to make sure that you know that the city of Wabasha is willing to really work with these people and make this thing click. We always have felt that way. Thank you.
Representative Walton.
Thank you. I just want to get back to one point on page 6. You know, one thing that they pointed out is changing the county seat. Well, I looked at that statute, but if we change the county seat from Wabasha City back to the city of Wabasha because there was annexation issues or something else, then I don't really see that we'd be... I think we'd go through a lot of unnecessary work to do that. And we're not going to change the county seat, even if we were to move it outside of the county seat to another city, if the county commissioners so choose, that we don't want to change the county seat at all. We want to keep the county seat the county seat. And the county seat does not mean that it has to have... the definition of the county seat does not say that there's a jail and a criminal justice center or a courthouse. A county seat is designated by statute to be a certain city within the county. In case you follow me on that. And then also I'm just wondering about 484.77. I think that was the other statute that they brought up. And I thank them for bringing forth these pieces of statute so that we can look at them and have the debate. But I would refer that to Ms. Pirius and ask her what her interpretation of that may be, or even Ms. Dyson. And that would be on page 5. I believe 484.77, if that's going to address the issues that they brought up or not about within the city of Wabasha. And maybe we can move on to other questions while that one's being further discussion addressed.
Representative Pamar.
Representative Welty, did I hear you earlier when you presented the bill saying that you had not, that there hadn't been a site selected, and that, so if I'm understanding the delete all, this wouldn't preclude the jail being built in the city of Wabasha.
Exactly.
You don't have a site specific yet.
That is correct.
So the idea is
to keep
the options open. Okay. I just want to also say too, I know like in my city, it's very controversial. They moved the jail. It's run to the east side now. And I know in the city of Duluth, they moved it almost, I think, out of the city limits. It's very close to the border of Hermantown, if I'm not incorrect. So obviously, it would be nice if it's connected to the courthouse, but it's not always feasible to do that. So I just want to put that out there, that other cities certainly have dealt with the transportation of prisoners to the court.
Representative Welty, I need to ask you to be very brief. We're going to go 5 minutes over, but out of respect to those who traveled and those who still have questions, we need to keep the questions to the testifiers. Is there any further, if I beg your pardon, Representative Welty, did you have a quick comment to finalize your response to Representative Pamar?
No, he is correct in his question to me.
All right. But questions to these testifiers. Representative Cornish?
I just wondered, Representative Welty, the your definition of local control.
Representative Cornish, can we keep the questions to the testifiers, please?
I thought he was a testifier.
Well, I mean, yes, he's a testifier, but he's the author of the bill. Those who aren't authors of the bill.
I'll pass then if you want to direct a question to one of them. I can wait.
Any further questions for those who are here from out of town? And
Mr. Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mayor, or City Council Member, the City Administrator, in approaching the county commissioners, were they basically saying they don't want your proposal or your offer that you've made to them already as far as making this available, this footprint that you've got here, or land available? Have they basically said, no, we're not interested in what you've got to offer?
Mayor Claus.
Thank you. I believe that Commissioner Reister would like to answer that question.
Councilman?
Actually,
Mr.
County Commissioner.
Okay, begging your pardon. I'm trying to go by my list. And
Pete Reister, County Commissioner, 4th District.
Commissioner?
Okay, would you please run that by again, please?
What I would like to know is if in your, the mayor or the city council or the city administrator going to the county commissioner saying we would like to offer this piece of land or we would like to work with you to make the opportunity available, we would go to any nth degree to be able to keep the new jail in coherence or right close proximity of the old jail, were there any rejection from the county commissioner saying, we want to survey the options out there, we're not interested in what you have to offer as a city?
Well, I don't know if I can speak for all the commissioners, but no, I mean, I don't think there was rejection of it. I would just like to speak for myself here a second on some of the background on it. The resolution that was passed by the county board was a 4-1 vote. That resolution was not on or was not in the board packet when we received it in the mail. It was put on the morning of a meeting. It was a 4-1. I'm the one opposed. I didn't feel there was sufficient time for that resolution to be put in front of us. It could have been a different vote had we had more time. I'm not sure. I would not say that the board totally rejected, as you're saying, the proposal, but the Wabasha County has been, or Wabasha City has been very clear and very upfront with us that they would do basically anything as far as vacation of streets and properties or anything that they could do to make this fit. I really have concerns with the, as it's been brought up many times, the inefficiencies that will come from a split, let's say the potential of it being a half an hour drive away. Our city limits probably they're huge. The city limits of Wabasha are basically Greenfield Township, what used to be Greenfield Township. I mean, it's a huge city limit. We have acres of open ground around us. Again, it's only 22,000 total in our county. There's ample room to build close. The inefficiencies that will go with this are, again, in a time of our budget crisis in the state and so forth, the duplication of staff and so forth, the communications with the state, I believe it's a T1 line or whatever that we communicate with the state, that has to be addressed. There's just so many issues that have not been addressed. Court service, the child support, just many things that go back and forth with the attorneys and so forth that we will be chasing our tail forever.
Commissioner, we're out of time, but if you could give me a quick answer, yes or no. In accord with the law permitting this to occur jointly with other counties, if there's financial reasons for your county to not be able to do this alone, have you as a county in any way contacted neighboring counties to consider a joint venture?
Yes, there has been. There was a committee. We've probably been together for, I'm going to say, 3 or 4 years. That discussion has been on the table. Correct.
And there's been no bites, so to speak.
Well, not really. Again, it gets down to this transportation issue and so forth. We had a jail. There was a jail built in 1875. There was one built in 1916 in the county, in the city of Wabasha. We certainly need one now.
Okay. Representative Welty, we're out of time, and I apologize. We haven't been able to take all the questions. I hope members will find the testifiers. If you folks are, any of you are able to stay, we will permit some time tonight or this afternoon. I apologize for the inconvenience. Representative Walty, do you have a closing comment for now? We'll lay it over for later this afternoon.
When is later this afternoon?
4:30.
4:30. Okay, thank you. Thank you for your time, members. I appreciate you listening to this testimony.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate your patience for this.
Vote on it now.
I believe it's in this room. Oh, excuse me. Room 5. Room 5. Okay, yeah. Good. We can hear better in that room. The committee is recessed until 4:30 in room 5. Thank you, members.
Okay.
Call the meeting back to order for March 9th. Apologize for our being a little late. And Representative Welty, I had a misunderstanding from my list this morning. It was not clear for me whether or not people were on the list for or against.
Oh.
And I thought all your testifiers were done and I didn't see anybody on the list against. So I apologize. I want to make certain if there are those who are against, for those who are against, that they have a chance to match somewhat of the somewhat match the time of those who are four. That's how we got on that pinch. I'd actually rather start with those because that's where we left off. If members have questions for those who were here speaking against, we may have brought that to closure. We may not have. If they'd have anything more they'd like to say, because we did cut their time a little short, if that's right with you, Representative Welty?
That is just fine.
All right. I apologize. I wasn't able to communicate that to you earlier. But you folks were cut a little bit short of time. I wanted to give you a few minutes just to finalize your comments, and if members had questions, and then we'd go back. And what I'd like to do, Representative Welty, because we've put a fair amount of time into your bill already, which is great. It's important discussion. I'd like to then go back to the questions members had for your testifiers. Okay? All right. Welcome again to the committee. I very much appreciate your patience.
Thank you very much. What we would do, what we'd like to do is entertain any questions that you folks may have regarding our presentation and our packet that we handed out. I think the packet has a wealth of information regarding our concerns and where this jail could be built, and at that I think we'll just let it go to see if you have questions and try to do the best we can to answer those questions.
Okay, Mayor Claus, questions from committee members. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I apologize if you covered this material before, but you know, sometimes we have short-term memories here. So, can you tell me a little bit about the city of Wabasha in terms of its size?
We're about 2,600 people. We're right on the Mississippi River between Red Lake and Winona. It's a beautiful, beautiful area. It's nestled in the bluffs, and we have started getting a lot of tourists. We haven't really pushed that area, but we do have many tourists there. We were growing into a kind of retirement home or retirement community. We have a lot of older people that are moving into the area, and I was born and raised there, went to high school there, and retired and moved back and was kind of bored, so I ran from there. But it's a friendly community. It's a friendly community, and I love it there. And we've got some great people.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Garofalo.
This is certainly outside the committee's purview, but like this Sunday is my wedding anniversary. Is there any restaurants down there?
Yeah, we got some great places, breakfast, and beautiful couple hotels that are nice, and a great place to come. And it's only 87 miles.
Like I said, I'm sorry. It's outside the committee's purview, but how many people are currently employed at the jail facility? I don't know if you have the numbers broken down.
I don't, but perhaps our county commissioner does.
Commissioner?
I would like to ask the county administrator if he could maybe fill us in on that.
I think it's a ballpark of about 30. It's a ballpark of about 30 sheriffs that work at, that are associated with the jail project.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt.
So, Mr. Chairman, just a final question.
Representative Garofalo.
I mean, do you see an economic impact to this if the jail leaves the city of Wabasha?
Oh, we do. We do indeed. Yes, we do. There's no question about it.
Thank you.
Further questions? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mayor, City Administrator, Commissioner. Am I correct in my memory here that wasn't there an Eagle Center put down in your area that, or am I thinking of a different area on the Mississippi?
That's true. We boast the home of the National Legal Center, and we've been open, I think, about 4 or 5 years, and we're in the process of building a new center and raising money, fund, and we have a lot of people that come in and look at the Eagles. One thing that we have, the Eagles just seem to roost there. They like it in Wabasha for whatever reason, and so that's why we are the home of the National Legal Center. It's great to come down now this time of the year.
Thank you.
Further questions?
Real quick.
Representative Paymar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mayor, if you were to build a new jail on this footprint, would you be coming to the state for any money?
Mayor Claus.
We would always like to come to the state for money, but I'm not going to say I'm not going to make any promises, you know. But I don't see that. We haven't talked about that in terms of our financing. We do speak to some financing there through with Dole Wheeler through our Southeast Minnesota Housing and Redevelopment Authority thing. They would be anxious to participate in that and help with financing and so forth.
Further questions? President Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this may go to this group of commissioners, but it may also go to the past group that was here. I'm certainly respectful of fiscal and sound management when you're dealing with the issues, and I certainly will probably agree that you're going to get the brunt of the issue brought back to you if you choose to move the jail site from Wabasha to any other location, and whatever you're going to do. So I guess I just was wondering about what else do you see as potentially leaving Wabasha if you were to move the site? Right now you're talking about a criminal justice center or a county jail, but what other kinds of services do you see losing within your community?
Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. Are you talking about other county...
County related or other related I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, thank you. Or other related to the business of the jail services?
Commissioner. Well, the potential is there for the courts, the county attorney's offices, the courts possibly. And again, it we're a county of 22,000 people. We cannot afford these inefficiencies that will go along with this split. I mean, it's just with 22,000 people, we have no major industry in the county to speak of. It will be a major burden on the taxpayers. I mean, again, I have no idea what it will end at. But county offices split that far apart. Many of our employees wear many hats. We cannot have these people out of the buildings. If the courts get behind, there they sit. Now, do they come back and go, you know, we're just going to be traveling back and forth between this facility. So, again, it just comes down to inefficiencies and the tax, with the tax situation we have in the state right now and the economy. And where gas prices are going now, we all know what oil prices do to the economy. It's probably the major, driving force in the economy. We can't afford.
I'd like to just add too that having the jail/courthouse in Wabasha has a profound economic impact on Wabasha. It brings a lot of people to our community. They spend money at dinner during noon hours. They shop. It just does have a huge impact. And of course, our Chamber of Commerce and our EDA and everyone else who is involved with our community is very anxious to continue to keep this. Call it an industry, if you like, in Wabasha. It's very important to us.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I'm very interested in this issue because I represent Austin and Maurer County and a little bit of Fillmore County, and we're looking at the same kind of issue in that wanting to build a county jail, criminal justice center, and all of whatever that might include. And I know there's some discussion about whether or not that's going to stay within the city of Austin or where they might like to put it on the outskirts of Austin. And I know there's some concern between the city and the county in that discussion. And so I guess what I'm wondering about, I appreciated Representative Lenteski earlier stating that this is a local control issue because if we decide one way or the other, we're going to be the people that have made that decision. But when it comes down to the final votes, you're going to have to decide as a county board member where it's going to go. And so do you not think that you'll get a lot of opposition to this, and that even if we would propose that this is okay and you are going to be our pilot project and we're saying, you know, this might be something to try in an outlying county, do you not think that the decision may still be that it will stay in Wabasha?
Commissioner.
Again, it comes down to educating the public on an issue, and we've all been there. It can be difficult. It all depends on how it's presented and so forth. But again, I hate to keep repeating myself, but it comes down to efficiencies. And I I can't fathom the efficiencies that it's just inefficient. I mean, I just can't understand why we would want to split it out. I mean, I just don't get the gist of it.
Representative Sanderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Basically, to the point that we were just talking about, and how much business would actually be lost if this prison or jail / whatever is relocated to a different area in the county.
Representative, currently, if we say we have 30 people, currently most of those people are both employed and living within the community of Wabasha. Plainview actually is approximately 20 miles, we all agree about, 20 miles halfway to Rochester. So those people would then be commuting to, should it be Plainview, should it be anywhere else, outside of the Wabasha area. That economic impact of those people leaving our community, either to sell their house to move because it's more cost effective to live next to where we want to work, would have a significant impact on the city of Wabasha. We have brand new restaurants downtown. Things are starting to happen in Wabasha. And the thing that I guess is frustrating to the city is currently there's a process that's afforded the county commissioners should that they go forward. If they want to move the county seat, there's a way to do that. There's it's all set out that provides a public process to do this. Clearly, the staff, the legislative research on this bill, at the very bottom, it indicates without public consent. I mean, it indicates that this can be permitted without any public review at the end of the process. But to answer your question, there would be a significant impact to the city of Wabasha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Over here. Over here. Yes, Commissioner?
I would just like to add to that a little bit, but again, I don't think Wabasha, I don't think what's driving Wabasha here is as much as the economic impact. I mean, I don't think that's what brought us. It's the inefficiencies, again, that we are looking at. I mean, it's, you know, or that's what I'm looking at. And I realize I'm repeating myself, but we keep going back to the economic impact of this. And that is not, in my own eyes, what's driving myself. I'm talking about the county inefficiencies that will come about from this move.
Representative Scalzi.
I was wondering if you could tell me, and I understand your inefficiency argument, how many people you transfer, say, in a month? From the courthouse to the jail in the current configuration, where you're going from the courthouse to the jail. Do you have any idea?
Not exactly, but I mean, every court case back and forth, and again, depending on where the courts end up, child support, child custody, every issue that has to come before the county attorney, we will be split. You know, we only have the one county attorney and an assistant. Again, many employees wear many hats. They'll be traveling back and forth.
We are forced to house many prisoners outside of our current jail because our jail is substandard, and we can't house juveniles. We can have no females, so we have a limited number of resources there. So we have a lot of people that go to Goodhue County. We even sometimes transports prisoners all the way to Nobles County, Worthington. That's all the way across the state. We've exhausted all of our efforts in Wisconsin. They don't want them over there. They won't let us bring them across the river. So I think the figure was bandied about the last time we looked was about $300,000 a year it cost us from transporting these prisoners to other facilities or from other facilities to be there for the three or four court hearings that they have to have before it even goes to trial. So it's very, very expensive.
Any other Representative Scalzi?
Yeah, I just had a follow-up. I'm just trying to get a handle on what we're talking about. Is it if you're transporting all these prisoners other places, and I'm assuming some of your business goes to these other places then as well with your county attorneys, et cetera,
Well, they all are. These are prisoners that are housed in other prison, other jails elsewhere, and we bring them to Wabasha for court, for the county attorney, for the social workers, for child support, for all those things. They all eventually come back to Wabasha. They're arrested. There's no room in our jail, so they go to another jail. They stay there until we're ready for them, and then they come to Wabasha. And that's where the expense is, that we don't have enough cells, beds, to maintain and keep those people.
Representative Scalzi.
Yeah, just to wrap it up, I think these are all good arguments that you should be giving to your county commissioners, and I understand how we're involved here because of the enabling legislation, but if there's such good arguments and it's so inefficient, why was the vote 4-1? That's what I just don't quite figure that. But maybe you don't know that either. I don't know. But I just think it's going to be.
I'm the mayor, and I don't. I'm not going to go there. But perhaps our county commissioner might.
As I mentioned earlier, that resolution was put on the board table the morning of the meeting. We had a couple hours during the meeting that it was on there. It was added to the agenda the morning of the meeting. It was not in our board packet 3 or 4 days prior. So it could have been a different vote had it been in the packet.
Any further questions here, Representative Wardlow?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question. I heard testimony earlier. The question was asked, did you look at property within or close to Wabasha, either city limits or inside or close to outside, before you brought this proposal forward? They said no, because of the time constraint we had to get this legislation going forward. And I thought another comment had been made that Wabasha was such a terrific host. Why would they not maintain some allegiance and look to you first to try to build the new facility in Wabasha before trying to go elsewhere? That kind of bothered me.
We of course oppose going elsewhere, and we are. I'm sorry. And we are on record and have been on record for many, many months to do anything necessary to facilitate this movement forward with the new jail and to build it right where we proposed in our packet.
Representative Wardle, I understood you probably thought that, but I was just curious as why the commissioners went right away out. It seemed to me like they just bolted for the door. That's the impression I'm getting. Am I right, or do you think I'm right, or you don't care to comment?
Well, I think that's a question for the next group, probably. I mean, as far as Wabasha has been to the table a number of times. In November, they ran. They offered to vacate streets, property, infrastructure. You know, I mean, Wabasha has never hesitated to support this project at once. I mean, you know, it's very obvious that they wouldn't work with us.
I was very generous on the packet that you have. There's a triangular shape there that's a park. And I said, well, we'll give that to the county. Well, the county already owned it, so that wasn't a problem. I didn't know that at the time, but we'll vacate the streets, so we have plenty of room.
Representative Markford. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess one quick question. From one being very poor to 10 being very good, what is the normal working relationship between the city and the county commissioners? This is fraught with difficulties because we have one commissioner here who is in opposition to the other commissioners, and then you have a city that seems to, I mean, just as Representative Wardlow is mentioning, there is something here that legislation is not going to solve. And I don't know if we as a committee are getting in the middle of something that we shouldn't be poking a stick at. And I guess from 1 to 10, if someone could say, what is the relationship? Where are we sitting? Because it doesn't look good, Mr. Chair.
Fair plus.
Yes, and I can see why you would say that. I think that basically, though, we have an excellent relationship with the county. As far as equipment and all sorts of services and sharing people and peace officers and things, we do a tremendous amount of that. If they need a piece of equipment that the city owns, it goes their direction. They help us, we help them. The county and the school and the city meet every month to talk about the way we can share things with the school, vice versa, how we can share help, how we can share facilities, and all those kinds of things. That part I would rate 8-9. I do, and I'm not quite sure why, but I do think that we have some problems that we need to somehow work forward and try to get the confidence of some of these other county commissioners to go along with this. That's all. That's all I can say. Perhaps you could ask them, and they're up here next.
Commissioner,
you know what we heard earlier were statements by the commission that they wanted to keep their options open, and everybody has the right to their own opinion and so forth. But they wanted to keep their options open. So you know, it's not that there's any conflict per se between the city and the county. It's just they wanted their options. We're lobbying, you know, our position. They're lobbying theirs. I would assume when we leave the room, we'll shake hands and go about our way. But, I mean, it's you're absolutely right. There's a debate going on. Absolutely. No doubt. And, again, Wabasha hasn't... I don't think the city council was... you know, I mean, they're sure they're concerned about the economic development, but I look at it as a total county issue, not my district. County issue. I don't want to spend the taxpayers' money chasing up and down the road. We have infrastructure in Wabasha. Everything is there. If we go out on a bare piece of land, and again, the city limits of Wabasha are huge. I mean, there's many, many acres, hundreds of acres that are not developed. To put a jail on. It's not a, you know, there's closer places than out of the city limits.
Representative Garofalo, we need to bring it to a close here.
Sure. Absolutely. I was wondering if the supporters, the commissioners who are in support of this, are they still here?
Yeah. Representative Garofalo, we were going to limit it to members who've had questions. I think I've had plenty of time to testify. And if there's no further questions for the folks at the table now, we'll call those up.
I want to thank you for the opportunity and invite you all to come down and spend some money in Wabasha. We got some great great places to stay and some dynamite restaurants.
Thank you.
I'll see
thank
you,
Mayor. Thank you. Those who testified in support, Mr. Commissioner Weinhorst and Commissioner Harms, welcome again to the committee. I appreciate your patience.
Thank you.
We do need to keep this as brief as we can, and so we have time to discuss the bill. Questions? I had this morning Representative Scalzi.
I know. I'm
okay. All right.
Thank you.
And Representative Wardlaw.
I'll ask that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll ask that question. I heard someone ask you, or one of you, if you had looked at within Wabasha city limits or close to it first, and you said no, because we didn't have time. And I might have misunderstood, but it seemed to me like if that's true, things are not all rosy in Wabasha.
Well, we have
Mr. Harms.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we had not been presented the plan that you were presented before today. I had not seen it. We had been had one plan from a city of Plainview, and I'll just give you my take on it, is that there was some pretty financially enticing things on the table to consider from the city of Plainview. And that's kind of what brought this to the forefront, because I think that my obligation as a commissioner is to try and get the best bang for the buck from the taxpayer's viewpoint. And that's how I tried to approach it.
Representative Wardlaw.
That sheds light on the issue. Another question would be, knowing that you had this plan in mind, did you ask for a plan or ask for some input? Did you go to the city and say, hey, what can you do to help us here before we go outside?
I did not.
Mr. Harms.
I did not personally do that, no. But I did. I had met with the mayor over a luncheon one day, and we did discuss some possibilities. But it was not in, anything where we could make a commitment to it at that point.
Representative Peterson, did you still have a question? Representative Cornish, do you still have a question? Further questions? Okay, thank you very much. This is another one of those bills where I'm afraid to ask the audience if there's anybody else who wants to testify for or against the bill. That being said, Representative Welty, we now have the Representative Hosh's motion before us. Discussion of the committee to Representative Welty. The Hosh motion was to move that House File 1287 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to, recommended to pass as amended, and be re-referred to the Public Safety Committee.
Mr. Chair, do you mind if I just make a couple closing remarks?
Representative Welty.
Okay, thank you. After I left here, there were a couple cases that I wanted to bring to point, and that was in Dodge County, for instance, they do contract with Olmsted County, with Steele County in Owatonna to house the inmates, and then they will do court proceedings either in Manorville, or they'll have some teleconferencing, or there's some ways that they work with that. So actually, you know, when we're looking at cases and splitting, splits have been made in the past. In Plainview, they did come forward with the proposal for the jail and the criminal justice center, so they would be in one area, so it wouldn't be split. So that's why the county commissioners had that option on the table. The options as far as the city of Wabasha and what they brought forward, they didn't have anything on the table yet. They wanted to be able to look at Plainview's option, knowing that that wasn't the only option that they're going to consider. But they did want to move forward with some legislation to allow them to look at that, as well as keeping the jail and criminal justice center within the county seat. And that's why they came forward and asked me to start moving on the legislation so that all options could be on the table. I just wanted to point out that Mayor Neil Weaver was here earlier, and President of First National Bank in Plainview, Dean Harrington. He's a member of the Area Development Corporation. Both of those two were here in favor, and the letter, you had both of their letters of support, one from the city and the resolution, and the other from Dean himself. I just wanted to make it clear that before this, we had not, the county commissioners had not seen the proposal from the city of Wabasha, so that is new to us. They had, yes, that was true, that the city of Wabasha had agreed that they would work together, but this was a relatively new document that we did see here today. They're serving as a pilot project. I think that was a very good idea, and I thank you for bringing that up, because if we look at the future of the judicial system, there is a move towards, in some court cases, to do more of the casework by teleconferencing. And so even if it was split, we may have that as an option. And when Commissioner Reister discussed the costs associated, all I'll say to that is that if we are able to move forward, if this legislation does pass, we will be able to look at all options within Wabasha County, and we'll be able to make an informed decision upon that. And I would just ask that you support the legislation, allow the county commissioners to make the decision at the local level. Thank you.
Discussion to the bill. Seeing none, Representative Hosh renews his motion that House Bill 1287 be recommended to pass as amended and be re-referred to the Public Safety Committee. All those in... On a serious note, all those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
No.
The motion does not prevail. The bill is not passed. Thank you, Representative Welty, and the patience of all of you who testified and committee members. Representative Erickson. Representative Erickson. We've got quite a juggling act going today. Representative Hoppe is here. Do you mind? Okay. Representative Hoppe, I appreciate your patience. In that previous one, we had people from out of town that have been waiting all day, and since I saw Representative Welty here, I just...
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Harry. Thank you very much for your patience and understanding. We will be brief. If we're not, feel free to throw us out.
You don't want us to vote your bill down, though, right?
Do as you see fit, members of the committee.
Welcome to the committee, Representative Hoppe. House File 1320. I understand that goes to General Register?
I believe so.
The chair moves House File 1320 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, the bill itself, all we're doing is going through statute and changing the name Hennepin Parks to Three Rivers Park. It's already changed on letterhead and signs and known as the parks. We're just doing it to make it official in statute. And, Mr. Chair, there is one amendment dealing also with Three Rivers Parks. If this amendment is controversial, members have questions or problems, we'll stop it. We'll reintroduce it as a separate bill. I don't think it will be. If it is, we won't take up any more of your time. We'll introduce it separately. And do members have copies of the amendment dealing with the park superintendent and the length of his contract?
Mr. Chair, we have two amendments in our packet, an A2 and an A3.
I apologize. There's a technical amendment, and that's the one that you and I discussed, Representative Holberg, and I thought that was already been incorporated in here.
Mr. Chair, if I might, I'd like to move approval of the A3 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Holberg. I appreciate that.
The A3 amendment is before you. Discussion on that amendment. Representative Anderson.
Representative Holbrook, what exactly does the A3 amendment, if it's technical, what does it do as far as?
Mr. Chair, and Representative Anderson, in reading the A3 amendment, every time the words Hennepin County Park District Reserve, Hennepin County Park Reserve appear, we're deleting it and putting in Three Rivers Park District.
That's it, Representative Anderson. We just found some more places after the bill was introduced where it was mentioned in statute. So just to be thorough, we're just trying to catch them all.
Okay, thank you.
Further discussion on the A3 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of the A3 amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Holbrook.
I'd like to move the A2 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Holbrook. I appreciate that. The A2 amendment deals with the park superintendent. We are changing the term from 2 to 5 years. That is the extent of the amendment.
Discussion on the amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Paymar.
So, Representative Hoppe, so the county, who is making this recommendation?
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Paymar. I have Mr. Court Holton here from representing the Park District. Park District, that can explain that.
Mr. Holton, was it?
Holton, H-O-L-T-E-N.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Please give us your name and position for the record.
My name is Court Holton, and I'm here today representing Three Rivers Park District. The A2 amendment would change the term for Park District that uses the mechanism to obtain the services of a superintendent that's set forth in 398.10, which, as near as we can determine right now, is only the Three Rivers Park District. That term would go from the present up to 2 years to the proposed up to 5 years, and the reason for that is we may be close to a retirement and be seeking the services of a superintendent. And if a 2-year contract is all that's available, then the cost is going to be higher if you can offer more job security, then you can get services for less cost. It gives them flexibility.
Further discussion, Representative Samuelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just a little bit foggy on what the purpose of the name change is.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Samuelson. I don't know what was behind it, but several years ago, it was always Hennepin Parks, and there are parks that aren't necessarily all in Hennepin County, and they changed the name to Three Rivers, I believe, to be more Everybody say it with me. Inclusive. And I think that's it. All we're doing with the amendment is trying to change that in statute. Thank you for your help.
Does that include you, too? Representative Peterson?
Representative Poppy, if this fails, dies in committee, can I have the scratch paper you're going to have?
Mr. Chair.
Representative yes. Hoppy. Representative Peterson, did you?
Just a comment, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I have the 1,400-acre park across the street from my place, and I'm going to still call it Hennepin County Park, but the sign has been on the park Three Rivers for
4 or 5 years?
Yeah, sometime.
Right.
And then as to your idea of extending the contract to 5 years, I would assume that would allow the board to make a 5-year designation if it were appropriate in their contract.
Mr. Chair and Representative Peterson, that's correct. Leaving it up
now
to the board.
Now they're under the board.
Right. And Representative Peterson, I still call it Hennepin Parks, too. Yeah. You and I can go shop at Dayton's and then go to the park. Yeah.
Further discussion, a little decorum here, please. Further discussion on the A2 amendment. All in favor of the A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Now you have Representative Hoppy. The bill is in the order you wish.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. Okay. No further comment here. I would appreciate your support, members. Thank you.
Discussion on the bill as amended. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I'd like to thank the committee and Mary for making an exception and letting us come in. I hope we were quick enough. Thank you. Have a good night.
Next, Representative Erickson. Thank you, Representative Hoppy. Welcome back, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I hope you don't see me too many more times. I really apologize for this morning because that amendment was circulated since the 2nd of March, which happened to be my birthday. So I know that people should have read it, and I felt a little blindsided this morning. But we've worked out the differences, and Mr. Chair, if you would be so kind as to move my amendment.
Okay, I'll renew my motion on House Bill 478, bringing the bill back up. And we have an amendment. It's the A2 amendment?
Correct.
Okay. Let's put the bill in the order in which the author would like it. And I'll move the A2 amendment to House Bill 478. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Representative Erickson, to the bill as amended and specifically to your amendment.
Mr. Chair, this was the agreement that we reached, the A2 amendment, after you were so kind as to allow me to work on it. But I do have an oral amendment. This morning, it seemed that those who were conferring with me felt that the oral amendment I made to change engineer to recorder was the right one. But it is not. And so, Mr. Chair, if you would undo the oral amendment this morning that you accepted as friendly on pages 1, 2, and...
Representative Erickson, that was, as I recall, I don't have it here yet, but that was changing...
Engineer to recorder.
Engineer to recorder. Okay.
And it has to be as it originally was printed. Mr. Pender had the original notes. And I was quite sure that I shouldn't have done it, but I was urged to do it this morning by the lobbyist, and he was wrong, and I was right. I checked with Mr. Pender, and the language is supposed to be county engineer.
Representative Erickson, could you give me the line and pages?
Yes, page 1, line 23, page 2, line 31.
Change the word recorder to back to engineer. Everybody have that amendment?
Mm-hmm.
I will move that amendment as stated by Representative Erickson. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a brief statement. This started out as an alternative way for counties that do not have full-time county surveyors to file or record certificates. When I got the revisor's office involved, as I mentioned this morning, we found three sections of statute that needed amending, needed some changing, and so that was accomplished, and that's the bill before you, and I appreciate your attention to it and would appreciate your vote.
Further discussion of the bill. Representative Lynchowski.
Thank you, Chairman Olson, and Representative Erickson. Thank you for your patience. The committee process is frustrating, and we appreciate that you got things worked out. And members, I'd like to move that this bill be, instead of, I think it was originally the motion was to send it to the General Register. I think we all know this isn't a very controversial issue, but there are a few problems, and Representative Erickson has figured them out for us, and I think we should refer this to the consent calendar.
So, Representative Lynchowski, you want to amend my motion to move it to this consent calendar? Any discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Lynchowski.
You have a problem with that? I see you're hitting.
Representative Lynchowski, I've learned that there are problems with putting bills on the consent calendar, even if the bills are worthy of consent calendar sometimes. And I'm trying to be sensitive to that.
Okay.
I'm not, whatever the committee decides, I don't, either way.
Mr. Chair? Mr. Chair? If I might, maybe the author might like to comment on that motion.
Representative Holberg, thank you. Representative Erickson.
Mr. Chair and committee, and especially Representative Lynchowski, I really appreciate your generosity. But like Representative Olson, I know that things can happen when bills are on consent calendars just because it's a psychological thing, and I prefer this be sent to the General Register as amended, Mr. Chair.
I would withdraw my motion.
Representative Lynchowski withdraws her motion. Thank you. Very cooperative here tonight. Thank you. Further discussion to the bill? Seeing none, I will renew my motion that House File 478 be recommended to pass as amended, be sent and be sent to the that House File 478 be recommended to pass as amended, be sent and be sent to the General Register. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The bill is passed and be sent to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Erickson and the members. Representative Diskins. We're picking up pace, Representative Diskins. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And as we pick up pace, you can imagine it's kind of like a horse race. And I've had practice talking about horses today, so I'm in the mood.
Representative Diskins, I will move, your bill needs to go to GovOps.
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
I will move House File 899 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Government Operations Committee. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, there is also a very technical amendment, the A1 amendment, that goes with this, and I would ask the committee to consider in adopting the A1 amendment to get the bill technically sound.
I will move the A1 amendment to House File 899 to get it in the order in which the author would like it. I apologize, I didn't see it in my stack here. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. To the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and committee members, this bill can be considered a good government bill. It's designed to make it easier for local governments to cooperate with one another to provide services. I've worked with this bill on this bill with our state auditor, Pat Anderson, and with the Senate author, Senator John Hottinger, and together we've developed this language. Gives the state auditor the authority to grant waivers to procedural requirements in state law that may prevent or hold back effective cooperation between local government. The bill also creates a grants board that would have the authority to issue grants to help local governments cover the startup costs of cooperative efforts that may prove to save money in the long term. This bill, Mr. Chair and members, has bipartisan support as the authors of the bill in the House and the Senate. It also has the support of several local government associations, including the League of Minnesota Cities, the Association of Minnesota Counties, the Metropolitan Intercounty Association, and the Association of Metropolitan Municipalities. Mr. Chair, that concludes my opening statements, and if it be the Chair's pleasure, I'd ask that Mr. Jonathan Pappas from the State Auditor's Office explain in detail the bill.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Pappick. You may proceed. State your name for the record, please.
For the record, my name is Jonathan Pappick. I'm the communications director and legislative liaison for the state auditor's office. Having had the chance to observe this committee for the last two sessions it's been, I can assure you that it goes without saying. I'll try to keep my comments brief. House File 899 has its roots in action taken by the legislature in 2003. In that session, the legislature directed the state auditor's office to conduct an annual best practices review of some aspect of local government service delivery. In early 2004, the state auditor convened an advisory committee of several local government associations to help select a topic. That advisory committee recommended that we examine local government cooperation. The state auditor accepted that recommendation in our first best practices review, Cooperative Efforts in Public Service Delivery, was released last December. As many of you know, many local governments around the state cooperate to provide services. They may do so to lower costs, to improve their current level of service, or to provide a service that they wouldn't otherwise be able to provide on their own. Our report highlights some of those successful cooperative efforts as a way to encourage them statewide. In order to complete the report, staff from our office talked to several local government officials around the state, and some of those officials identified administrative, statutory, or financial barriers to cooperation, and as Representative Biskin said, this bill is a means to eliminate those barriers, and the bill does so by recreating some of the functions formerly held by the Board of Government Innovation and Cooperation. That bill was eliminated by the legislature in 2002, but the state auditor feels that it would be worthwhile to bring back at least two of those functions. The two functions are as follows. One would allow the state auditor to grant waivers to certain procedural laws and administrative rules that may serve as barriers to cooperation. A couple notes on that. The waivers can only be granted if the local government has already been, in the case of administrative rules, can only be granted if the local government has followed the process for exemption from administrative rules in Chapter 14 and had already been denied by a state agency. In the case of laws, I would note that they have to be procedural laws. Waivers can only be granted. We could not waive a required outcome in the law, but we could waive processes for achieving that outcome. The second facet of the bill addresses another kind of barrier to effective cooperation, that being financial barriers. We found in talking with local officials that many cooperative efforts struggle to get off the ground because the cost of planning the agreement and integrating the service between two or more local governments can be cost prohibitive. Under this proposal, a grants board consisting of the state auditor and four legislators appointed by the majority and minority leaders in both houses would offer grants to cover these startup costs. Due to the current state budget situation, however, we are not asking for an immediate funding for this grants board. However, the state auditor believes it is important that we at least put this infrastructure in place so that if funding becomes available in later years, grants could be offered immediately. And lastly, I would say that while this legislation recreates some of the functions of the Board of Government Innovation and Cooperation, we are not recreating that board or its budget. In fact, our office should be able to absorb the cost of these additional duties without an increase in our budget. And so while this bill requires no immediate cost to the state, we feel that its implementation could lead to long-term savings for local governments and has the possibility of improving public service for Minnesota's taxpayers. And as Representative Biskin noted, it has bipartisan support as well as the support of several local government associations. And with that, I would take any questions members might have.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Just two quick questions. Why was the this Board of Government Innovation and Cooperation disbanded in 2002? What were the reasons for that?
Mr. Peppin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, as I understand it, it was funding issues in 2002.
Representative Hornstein,
can you give me, perhaps, Mr. Papaga, like a case study, very quick, maybe a real-world example of, you know, some local government cooperation that may not have been able to happen, you know, and this bill would anticipate it, correct?
Mr. Papaga.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, one example that comes to mind that was a waiver granted by the Board of Government Innovation and Cooperation. There was a joint powers board of some sort in Greater Minnesota that had 10 different cities and counties operating together, and I can't exactly remember what the service they were providing was, but they had a problem meeting regularly and satisfying the requirements of the open meeting law because they were geographically spread out and it was difficult to get together and meet. The Board of Government Innovation and Cooperation granted a waiver that allowed them to conduct meetings via conference call, and that's where we get into the laws being procedural waivers. The board could not grant a waiver to satisfying the requirements of the open meeting law, but they could grant a waiver to how those requirements would be achieved, and they did so by granting a waiver to allow them to conduct meetings via conference call.
Thank you.
Further questions? Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On page 8, this is probably more a curiosity question. It says on line 24, for instance, up to 15 points shall be awarded to reflect the extent to which the application demonstrates clear thinking, careful planning, cooperation, involvement, etc. Is there a rubric to follow there? Is that a guess? Or how do they decide who gets 15 points? Or how do they decide to rate that?
Representative, Mr. Chairman, Representative Wardlow, the second part of the legislation creates a grant grants board, a board which actually would provide grant money to help these startups. Now that board is spelled out in the legislation, which would include the state auditor and four legislators, so it's a board of five. What the law basically does in this section is give them some guidelines so that it is an objective manner in which grants are determined and not at the whim of two or three members of the board itself.
Representative Wardlow.
I understand that. I like the idea. But how to award up to 15 points is very subjective. I was wondering if I just eyeball it and say I think it's worth a 10. Or
Representative, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Chairman and Representative Wardlow. You and I share similar backgrounds as mathematics teachers, and when we put 5 points on a test item, what Representative Wardlow gives a 4-2, Representative Biskins might give a 5-2, and of course vice versa. Yes, there is a measure of subjectivity, as I think is quite appropriate, and that's part of the dialogue and the debate that goes with the board. So while there is objective standards, rubrics, I think is a very good word from a wonderful educator, all right? While there is a rubric, it isn't so absolute hard and fast that the human element of dialogue, debate, and interaction is now ruled out, and so you don't put it into a machine and have something else kick out. You do have to analyze the factors, and so I would agree there's a measure of subjectivity, and I think that's a good thing.
Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fiskins, is there a provision in your bill whereby the cost savings that you would see as a result of this cooperation could be used to repay the grant?
Representative Fiskins. Mr. Chairman, Representative Holbert, grants, not loans, so there is no provision to repay the grant in the bill.
All right, Mr. Chair and Representative, I was on the Board of Innovation and Cooperation. I waded through the stacks and stacks of paper in the grading process and handing out the money, and actually when it went away, I thought that was a good thing. There were very, very, very few projects that warranted the additional money. If, in fact, it was going to save money or be more efficient, they should be doing it anyway. It was my take on the particular program. So I'm going to be voting against your bill. I just think that we don't need to go down there. We've been there, done that, and I just don't think it's necessary.
Representative Paymark.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. I just have a question about why the state auditor is the entity to oversee this when some of the rules and the laws that you're looking for waivers on aren't necessarily fiscally related.
Mr. Pepik.
Mr. Chair, Representative Paymar, when we came up with this proposal, we were actually open to any entity administering this process. We met with our advisory committee of several local government associations. They recommended that the state auditor be the logical place where this is administered. And we went through the same process with Representative Fiskins and Senator Hottinger, and they both came to that same conclusion.
Thank you.
Begging the author's pardon, Representative Hornstein and Representative Paymar got to this issue, and I'd just like to comment because Representative Hornstein brought up an important fact about the history of this and why this is in the auditor's office. I was here when they created the Board of Government Innovation, and there was quite a number of us, not just me, but quite a number of us who identified constitutional issues with delegating legislative authority to that board that wasn't elected, nor was it a constitutional office. This is an elected constitutional officer that's making these decisions, and this is what I was leading up to, Representative Fiskins. Is there any way in this bill, and Mr. Pavic, is there any way in this bill where a policy can be changed? Because we really don't have the right to delegate our legislative authority. I see on page 6 something that's also encouraging to me, lines 7 through 10. The agreement may specify the duration of the waiver or exemption. It must specify, and it must be no less than 2 years and no more than 4 years. So this is for a specific window of time, and that, to me, puts the bill in the spirit of looking for trial and error things, and we'll learn from this and come back to the legislature for with possible changes. Is that kind of the spirit of this?
Mr. Chair, I'd say that's a correct observation. And as to your question about policy, I'm looking to find it, but in describing the types of waivers that can be granted, it actually does say in the bill that if it's a change in policy, the waiver cannot be granted. And I'll look to find where that exact language is.
Thank you. Further discussion? Representative Hosh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just to the point of what Representative Holbert spoke of. I think establishing this board is very important, and I've got a real life example of us trying to work within a regional agreement for trying to establish how our fire service in the St. Cloud area was going to be implemented and expanded into the future with placement of fire stations, how things were going to be working out. This was in the time of our budget cuts, of LGA cuts, and we simply could not do anything because we didn't have the money to do a study. I think that was an issue that was very important that would have served the betterment of the entire community, but would have been complicated and spendy. But I think this is one avenue in which we may have been able to accomplish such a goal. And I would support this bill, and I hope others can too. And if we're not directing the money towards worthy projects, this is always up for review next year. So.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think anything we as a state can do to encourage cooperation among local units of government is a good thing for us to be doing. In our part of the state, we've had a city-county cooperative organization going for years, and we didn't have a grant to get us started. We just started it, and it's paid dividends to the cities and counties that have been active members of that organization. So I'm in support of what you're trying to do, Representative Biskins. One of the questions that I have is, I'm wondering if it would be better to provide some kind of reward to those who are doing good things, to kind of have this grant program be, you know, you've done a good thing, here's some money to add value to what you're trying to do, as opposed to upfront money or all of it being upfront. Have you considered that kind of an option?
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Lannan. You know, I think the proposal you bring forth is good, all right, and it's one worthy of further discussion. You know, Representative Holberg and I sometimes share similar views on things, and that's good on this issue. You know, in Utopia, you know, people always do get together and do what needs to be done. But that's in Utopia, right? It doesn't exist everywhere. I will say, you know, my reason for me bringing this bill forward is I know where a little bit of Utopia is. It's in Scott County, and they're one of the models for this legislation because they have a wonderful working group that served as an inspiration to this legislation. It's called SCALE, Scott County Association of Leadership and Efficiency, and it is local representatives from all units of government coming together and working together. And they did it, as you know, has been mentioned before, without specific legislation, but it was difficult, right? And having carrots to help them move forward would have been tremendous and would help them move forward faster. I'm on the front end yet, providing the carrots to get them moving forward, but Representative Lannan, you're on the other side, and I think quite appropriate also would be the recognition, more than a silver star and a pat on the back, but maybe some tangible recognition for the quality work that people are doing is a good idea to explore also.
Representative Wardle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was looking on page 8 again, and we were talking about a repayment of grants. Representative Holberg was line 14 through 19 talks about repayment of the grant if the auditor deems fit. Just thought I'd point that out.
Mr. Peck.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wardlow, you're correct in pointing that out. However, that only occurs if the state auditor finds that the local government has failed to implement the cooperative effort as agreed to under the grant.
I understand.
Further discussion? Seeing none, is there anyone else who would like to testify for or against the bill?
Mr. Chair.
Excuse me.
Sure. John Thorson with AFSCME Council 5, American Federation of State County Municipal Employees. We represent about 18,000 local government employees in the Twin Cities, Duluth, St. Louis County. And I'm here today not in opposition to this bill, but with concern for the process as it was proposed. I've since had an opportunity to speak with Representative Biskins, folks from the Auditor's Office, and Senator Hottinger. And believe that they're willing and interested in working on this issue. And the concern was that the mechanism set up for being granted a waiver didn't afford an opportunity to folks to speak prior to the waiver being granted. It was all after one had been denied. And looking for an opportunity for affected parties, whether it be a bargaining unit, other local units of government, maybe a business or citizens, to be able to have a say prior to the granting of a waiver. The narrow piece of procedural law sometimes does have real-world consequences. You know, a lot of times procedural areas involving procurement, purchasing, notification do change outcomes, even though they're neutral in the process, and giving folks an opportunity to speak to that prior to a waiver being granted or not. please forgive me even a chance to opt out of an opt out on the front end before a waiver is granted. And again, speaking with Representative Biskins, Senator Hottinger, and the auditor's office, be happy to work between here and the next committee staff and see if there's a process that can be added.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Horsey.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Thorson, for weighing in on this. I guess I'm again looking back at if this some version of this was tried once. I'm interested in if there were any precedents set that could, help us understand what may be coming down the road if this bill passes. Were there any examples in this previous incarnation of the board where there were issues or concerns that organized labor had with collective bargaining or other issues, when this was tried this other time?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Not to my knowledge, in talking with Senator Hottinger, it sounded like process-wise, in his former incarnation, it was just a difficult place to do business and have this consideration. I do think looking at it, if there was an opportunity going forward that involved the process for interested parties, again, whether they be bargaining units or other local units of government, to have a say prior to a waiver being granted, I think that would improve the outcome.
Thank you, Mr. Horson. Representative Horson.
I guess having heard that, I wanted to express my appreciation to Representative Biskins for working with the parties, and I know there were concerns that Mr. Thorson had at the beginning and others, and I appreciate your working cooperatively to resolve those.
Further discussion? Seeing none, the chair renews his motion that House File 899 be recommended to pass as amended and be re-referred to the Government Operations Committee. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
No.
The motion prevails. The bill is passed and be re-referred to Government Operations. Nobody's testing my hearing today. Mr. Chair,
Representative Olson.
I know we're running short of time, members, and I appreciate your tolerance here. And I want to thank my testifiers. They can come up now, here in a minute anyway. I've moved my bill to the end of the agenda because we had such conflict with a lot of time. But appreciate your patience, and I will make it brief. I'm going to go through a quick slide presentation, and I'm going to skip a few slides because I know we're really tight on time. I'd like to move, Mr. Chair, House File 1174 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register to get the bill before us. And Mr. Chair, members, we all know that local governments have authority to bond for various projects. This bill is very simple in that it adds to that list of what projects can be bonded for by local units of government, and that would be to bond for personal rapid transit systems to improve them. I have another bill coming along that we'll be hearing more of later. Because of the technical difficulties, I'm going to ask Aaron Gebauer to come from Citizens for Personal Rapid Transit to testify while we're getting the presentation ready to go.
Mr. Gebauer, is that the way it's pronounced?
Correct.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
You may proceed. Please identify yourself for the tape.
My name is Aaron Gebauer. I'm a resident of St. Paul, a mechanical engineer, and an active member of an organization called Citizens for Personal Rapid Transit. I'm very pleased to be here and to talk about personal rapid transit. As an engineer, what I do is I take technology and I try to solve problems. In other words, I try and find the right tool for the job. And without getting into all the details of the recent debate about transit in our state, it's clear to me anyway that the tools that we have available to us aren't doing the job. At least the tools that we have aren't, they're all tools that are necessary, but tools that aren't solving the needs of various communities and the ridership. And that's really the problem, is to provide transportation that meets the needs of the ridership of any community, be it a large-scale metropolitan area or an airport or a shopping mall or a small town, college, university, what have you. It would be ridiculous, for example, to put a train on a college campus or to try and meet the needs of an entire city by only one means of transportation, which is why we have multiple modes of transportation. Personal rapid transit, which I believe you're about to see, is and it's a new technology, but it's one based on existing concepts, at least technically speaking. Personal rapid transit is a system of elevated guideways, and it is a network that connects stations. What's different? Why is that different from a train station, you may, or a train system, you may ask? Well, personal rapid transit is built around the idea not of moving large groups of people all at once on a schedule, but having individual cars that provide nonstop on-demand travel between those destination points. It uses small, lightweight vehicles as opposed to large scale vehicles. Because when you think about it, most trips as people get around are designed for themselves. They need to go where they need to go, not where everybody else needs to go. They're elevated guideways, which is a particularly useful feature in that it is a low impact on existing infrastructure. Say, for example, if you wanted to put in a transit system, you might consider personal rapid transit, which only uses the area needed to put up the posts for elevated guideways, as opposed to an entire rail system or an entire roadway or an entire freeway system. The stations are designed to be offline. These are sidings where traffic passes the stations if it doesn't need to stop there. So if you are on your trip, you don't need to stop for stoplights or traffic crossing your path. You simply go straight to where you need to go. Unlike a bus or a train, for example, which might run on a schedule, vehicles are circulated in the system such that they're available when you need them. So, again, this is a technology which meets the needs of the ridership because it operates on the schedules of the riders and not on its own schedule. Are you ready to proceed? I'll let you go ahead. Thank you for the opportunity to address the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Gebauer. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We had it going. Oh. Oh, we are going. Okay, you just saw a picture. Personal rapid transit. PRT is the only personalized, nonstop, to your destination, fully automated, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, fully mass-producible public transit system of its kind. SkyWeb Express, or Taxi 2000 Corporation, is the company that was formed after this technology was developed over 30-plus years of time through the University of Minnesota. The University of Minnesota is positioned to get dividends from this technology once it's built and up in operation. The Taxi 2000 has a prototype in a facility warehouse up in Fridley, and the name of this is SkyWeb Express, and I want to give them due credits for all their work. This is a picture of an offline station simulation, and this is what establishes this technology in transit over any other technology. It creates the capacity of a freeway on a transit system in that the vehicles are able to go nonstop to their destination that the individual would program the vehicle to on their own. And having the capacity like an on-off ramp on a highway, that creates the ability for everybody to go nonstop without being hindered by other people needing to get on and off the system at the very same time. So it greatly increases the throughput, as it's called, on the system and creates the ability to have a fully automated transit system on demand. Here's a picture of a highway. As you can see, the throughput of this highway is about 6,000 cars an hour on each side. And here's a picture of all the people on that highway. If you could take them out of the cars, put them in the middle of the highway, put them in PRT vehicles, and you can see the great benefit and capacity comparison between an interstate highway and a PRT system, 15 feet versus 300 feet. And again, you see the on-off ramp there on the left side of the picture. That, in effect, is what this transit system has the capacity to do, creating the on-off ramp effect of an interstate highway so that everybody can just keep on cruising, no more stop-and-go lights. So it is truly even more non-stop than our freeway system when it's congested. But just as much free-flowing as a freeway system when it's not congested. Here's a visual, an artist rendering of what it can look like underneath, in the sense that it's all elevated, does not interface with the current system. So all that land mass can be used down below. It can run through parking lots. It can go in quite a number of places. Generally, is proposed to go up and down streets on top of existing or reinforced stop-and-go light poles and street light poles, so it fits within the current infrastructure very, very well without any added congestion after it's built. Now, here is a picture of the guideway. The size here is about 3x3. This is the actual guideway that's in the facility in Fridley, and this was built by Bentec in Duluth. Here's a picture of the chassis before it was put into that guideway and the car body was installed on it. This is otherwise known as an 18-wheeler because there are only 18 moving parts in the whole vehicle. The picture at the part of the bottom there where you see the two fan, black round black pieces, those are fans and a linear induction motor. This runs by linear induction motor. This is all electric, and in effect, it's like two magnets chasing one another down the guideway, also used for braking. So there's no moving parts in the motor, and all the moving parts that are in it are basically rollers. So the life expectancy of this is very high. Here's a picture of the vehicle when it was put at the state fair. And here's a visual so that you can understand how it steers, because there's no moving parts in the guideway. You see the black bar there, and looking at the vehicle, looking at it, if you envision that the vehicle is coming towards you as a committee, and you can see that the red bar is up on the right-hand side, that means that with the vehicle coming towards you, if there's a station on the left side, that vehicle would turn into the station. So when you go to the station and you program the vehicle to go to its destination, your destination, that vehicle, the computer system is running that lever and automatically moving those wheels up or down to adjust for the stations that are coming, whether they're on the right side of the track or the left side of the track, and thereby directing that vehicle to your destination that you've programmed the vehicle for. Now, I'll get to this point more so in a minute, but this is all off-the-shelf technology. Because when you get in this elevator out here in this building, well, maybe I should say in a new building, when you get into an elevator in a building and you push a button for a certain floor, the same kind of technology used in a vertical sense in that elevator is the kind of technology used in a horizontal sense in this PRT system to determine where the vehicle is on the system and
confirm when that lever needs to move to make sure you're either going past the station, if it's a station you don't want to go to, and turning into the station that you want to go to, giving you a safe, nonstop ride to your destination. No moving parts in the guideway, so there's no way that the guideway can fail. Design and technology advantages, minimum size cars and guideways, automatic control, offline stations. This is basically a summary in the in-vehicle switching, linear induction electric propulsion and braking, fault tolerant software and design. Professor Anderson, who developed this technology along with many other engineers, but he was the lead engineer on it, has had a lot of experience with automatic landing systems with Boeing jets, and this fault tolerant software is a dual redundant system. So you basically have four backups and very minimal failure, very little, low likelihood of any failure at all. If there is a failure, the cars are programmed so they can push one another off the guideway and they can be overridden by the mainframe controller. Here's a visual of how simple it is to erect. You excavate, you pour a foundation, you set a post. From that point on, it is all fully mass-producible in the factory, so we can ship transit systems all around the United States and all around the world, unlike any other transit system. In fact, the highway system is not even fully mass-producible. This is the only transit system I've ever seen that is truly fully mass-producible, short of the foundation. The posts, the guideway, the vehicles, they're all mass-producible on an assembly line. Here's an artist rendering of how you could avoid trees and stay more removed from the residential community and residential area. Here's an artist rendering of going through a suburban office building area. This one involves the spanning of a freeway. And here's a picture of what Councilmember Zimmerman will be talking to us about here in a minute, very briefly, but a picture of the part of the proposal for the downtown Minneapolis area. These are, have some summary slides, and I'm going to just go through them very, very quickly. Short walk, always available with short or no wait, safe, secure, reliable, nonstop travel, trip time predictable and competitive, private and comfortable, climate controlled, all-weather operation, and ADA compliant. You basically go to a station, buy a prepaid code, barcode card, find your destination number from the information kiosk, press that number. It can even be automatically programmed if you're a daily commuter. Your card can be programmed so you don't go anywhere but walk up and swipe your card, and the card can be programmed so when you come back to your destination, when you come back to the station that you went to, the card is already programmed so it will take you back to your original destination and you're never pushing any buttons. You ride nonstop to your destination. Benefits: less land use, reduced congestion, air pollution, traffic noise. Councilmember Zimmerman is going to cover a lot of these points, and I'll just breeze through this. Transit capacities. Light rail, you have 7 minutes per vehicle, 60 seconds, minute, 420 seconds per train. At capacity, 200 people per car or 400 people per two-car train. That's our current loads. It could be higher. PRT, 0.5 seconds per car or 840 cars in 7 minutes. It's hard to believe that this can greatly meet the needs of light rail and even exceed in capacity until you add more cars to light rail. Because of that throughput of offline stations, it has this capacity. At capacity of 3 people per car, or 3 times 840 is 2,520 people in 7 minutes. So PRT capacity versus light rail at the current use of light rail is 6.3 to 1. Now, as soon as you add more vehicles to a light rail car or add more trains, that would change. But with current capacity, we're well in the position of being able to provide all the capacity we need for the train system that is currently feeding downtown Minneapolis, and anticipating more systems coming, this system could greatly provide a really great service in just moving people around once they're downtown. And Councilmember Zimmerman will address the pollution concerns and capacity to meet those needs as it stands right now. It's all off-the-shelf technology. I have a film here. I'm just going to give you a clip of it. You'll know what it is once you see it. Okay. Oh, I know what it is. This is an automatic highway system demo in 1997. This film is to simply show you that this is truly all off-the-shelf technology. These cars are running without a driver driving them in the sense of using the pedal, the gas feet, the brakes, or the steering wheel. These cars are automatically following a guided highway with automated technology. This was done in 1997, and the point of this is that it's already proven technology in an uncontrolled environment. PRT is a fully controlled environment. These cars have the capacity to change lanes. They have the capacity to merge in an uncontrolled environment. PRT is in a controlled environment, as you have seen already in what I've showed you. This film, along with seeing that all the other technologies here in this system were all off-the-shelf technologies, is what drove me to begin supporting PRT before the prototype was even built in Fridley. It is just phenomenal what we have here today. And I'm sorry that things got a little... Oh, I see Mr. Anderson is here. I thought he had to leave. But Maury Anderson is here. We'll have a few words to share. This is a Minnesota company. Almost everything that's here was built by Minnesota companies. And I believe it's critical that we keep this in Minnesota. And the purpose of this bill is to show legislative support without any cost to the state at this point, but to show communities that we want this technology, we believe it will really help our system and work much better supporting the current system. And with that, I'll pull out of this. I apologize for not having time. If any of you want, I can email you this if any of you want to see the whole film. But it's amazing to see that this is all off-the-shelf technology. Here's a list of the companies. I won't go through them all, but they're Honeywell, you see. A lot of them from Duluth. Here's the credits to Skylab Express and Taxi 2000 for all their work with this prototype. There's two websites there, one for Citizens for Personal Rapid Transit. And next up, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn it over to Councilmember Zimmerman for some added points that I tried to breeze through. And we have Maury Anderson on deck with Taxi 2000.
Councilmember Zimmerman, welcome.
Thank you.
If you would please state your name and position for the tape.
I am Dean Zimmerman. I represent the 6th Ward and the Minneapolis City Council. And I came to be interested in this because of the problems in my ward. I represent an area where many people don't have cars. They have a hard time getting around on a bus system that doesn't necessarily take them where they're going. And it turns out to be fairly expensive for them. If a mother has three kids in tow trying to go to the grocery store in a bus, that's a big cost, whereas in this system she could load all three up on the thing for one fare. Significant savings for poor people in the inner city. Also, the problems of health. But, you know, it's rare that a new technology will so profoundly affect so many aspects of our lives. And this transportation system, when it is built out, will affect many aspects of it. The environment, the economy, the tax relief, health, congestion, land use, and creating better circulation, easier for people to move around, and certainly making it easier for handicapped people to move around. Let me just back up and go through those a little bit. The environment, of course, we know that we are filling the air with all kinds of poisons from our burning of coal and petroleum and natural gas, and that this is a system that will operate on electricity, all of which can be produced by Minnesota-generated wind power. And that then, of course, leads us to the whole question of the economy. Right now in the state of Minnesota, we export billions and billions of dollars every year to import energy in the form of petroleum when we're sitting on one of the most energy-rich areas in the world, with the capacity to generate our electricity, which could power this transportation system right here with no ill effects. Today there's an asthma epidemic in the inner cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Thousands of kids have asthma, again due to the the emissions that are being generated by our current transportation system, which is 95% relying on automobiles, and the buses don't help that much either. In fact, they tend to be a little dirtier than the automobiles. And so if we can build a system which is going to eliminate those emissions, which this system does, we then go a very long way towards eliminating the asthma epidemic that is facing so many of our inner city kids. Tax relief. This is a system that will never require an operating subsidy from the taxpayer's pocket. Now, I know that's going to be a difficult hurdle. Where are you going to find a legislators who are willing to support a transportation system that doesn't require an annual operating system out of the taxpayer's pocket? But if we can get over that hurdle, we might be on to something here. Congestion. This system does not leave behind congestion or does not create congestion. That it is built totally segregated from all other existing forms of transportation, and this doesn't mean that they will not continue to operate. They will, but I think we will see once established over time that this will take over a larger and larger share of the transportation market. Right now, if you're going to go to downtown Minneapolis or downtown Stillwater, you have to think real seriously about what you're going to do with your car once you get there. Maybe you're parking in downtown Minneapolis, maybe take out a mortgage on the house to pay for the parking. It's difficult. But here we, this is, you have the same relationship to this sky cab that you would to an ordinary taxi cab in that you get in it, you ride it with yourself or your family. You're not riding with strangers. And when you get to your destination, you don't look back and say, now what am I going to do with that big hunk of steel? You just leave it there, and it's available sitting in the station right there ready for the next person to jump in and go. And land use has been talked about as well. Right now in downtown Minneapolis, we have a lot of our land, well, throughout the whole city, a lot of our land is taken up with parking structures. This eliminates the need to build more parking structures. Now, it is true that we have a number of municipal parking ramps that do generate money for the city of Minneapolis, but if we would tear those down and put up a 25-story office building, it would probably generate 10 times as much revenue for the city on that very same piece of land. So it is a much more efficient use of our land. Better circulation. I've drawn a 68 station system for downtown and greater downtown Minneapolis that connects uptown Minnehaha Mall, downtown, and the West Bank of the University. It will move people around much faster. And what it does, in essence, is create a huge pedestrian zone that you can get up in your in the morning and walk to the nearest station, go to downtown, and your way home, you get in the thing, you go stop at the cleaners, pick up your dry cleaning, stop at the flower shop in a different location, and go home. That's very hard to do on a bus or a light rail, but totally easy to do in an automobile, and totally easy to do in the PRT, and you don't have the parking problems with this. I think it should be pointed out that handicapped people will be able to use this. A person who uses a wheelchair, if they can get themselves out the front door and down the block, can use this with as equal ease as anyone who uses their legs in the regular fashion. So this will go a long way towards eliminating the need for our metro mobility, which is a hugely expensive transportation system, certainly a needed service for our citizens in wheelchairs, but they'd be virtually eliminate the need for it because they can use this with equal ease and get them around with the flexibility that we enjoy with our automobiles. And you go on and on, but we can imagine this. I mean, try to imagine going to the waterfront in Stillwater without having to fight all of that traffic. The parking could be done remotely, and people moved into their destinations. This could be done in Duluth. It could be done in any town, no matter what size.
you make it much easier to use the land that you have. And this will also then increase use of people who are doing commuting on other forms of transit. So what I've created here with my plan for a 68 station system is create a giant 3.5 mile wide grid for every bus and every train to hit. And once they hit that, they unload the passengers and they are scattered to fine-tune their destination. If you think of a bus line, it's really a straight line. Maybe this bus line goes along for 8.5 miles and it misses the destination by 3/4 of a mile. What have you got? You got an automobile driver. So this would allow the bus driver to come in from Burnsville, get to the web area, and fine-tune their destination in just a couple of minutes. Thank you very much.
First, Representative Garoppolo had a question.
Sure. I guess I'm really interested in this from a technology perspective. As everyone knows, I'm a network engineer, but we can let the presentation finish itself before I start asking those questions.
Okay. Representative Baymore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question, Council Member Zimmerman, about the handicap accessibility. I'm curious, I'm just trying to think about your ward, like let's say on Lake Street. I'm not sure exactly what your boundaries are, but it seems to me you would need almost, to make it ADA compliant, you would almost need a station every block with an elevator in order to make it ADA compliant. Wouldn't that be correct?
Partly, yes. I've drawn a system that has over 95% of the area in that web area that I described to be within 3/8 of a mile. Of a station, and every station is elevated, so there is an elevator at every station. Absolutely, that's why it's so expensive at, you know, being about 1/3 the cost of a light rail.
And
Representative Baymore,
and in your scheme, you don't see this as being visually sort of unattractive for the community.
I do not. It's. That is an argument we have. You know, here we are standing, by a five-lane highway, and you're asking me if this little 3x3 elevated thing is going to be visually distracting.
I'm talking about, refurbishing Lake Street like so many business people want to do and the community wants to do.
Yeah, well, actually, this is the argument. There is no transportation system that is going to be 100% hidden unless you build a subway. And it's a question. You can ask yourself whether these things going by overhead virtually silently are more intrusive than a bus going down Lake Street, roaring, making noise, competing on the street for room, and belching fumes. You know, which of those is more intrusive into your life? I mean, that's something, of course, everybody would have to answer for themselves. But, no, I don't think that is a significant thing. And if you ever do take the time to look at the map that I've drawn, you see that I've run it down for the most part on the edges of freeways or down big streets like Hennepin or Lindale that already are choke full of automobiles. So I'm not sure that this would significantly change the aesthetics of the area.
Thank you.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have a few questions, but I guess for Councilmember Zimmerman, I just wanted to be clear. The City of Minneapolis has not taken any formal action endorsing this or, supporting this bill. Is that correct?
That's correct. There is, support for the idea among many council members, but we haven't moved forward any official action yet. It's having a hard time trying to figure out what exactly. You know, if you ask somebody, do you support this? Oh, yeah, I think it's a great thing. Would you support it if we asked you to spend $600 million to build out the system I've designed? Well, maybe not. So, right now, we're kind of waiting for the engineering tests to be done on the system. We know that there's private investors waiting in the wings to get in on this thing, but they're not going to commit their money until some governmental agency says it's okay to build it. And if
we had the bonding authority, then I'd be in a position to say, let us do some bonding for building a test or at least running a study on how this might save money for the people of Minneapolis.
Representative Hornstein.
Mr. Chair, also for Council Member Zimmerman or maybe Representative Olson, is there any local government, either municipality or county in the state of Minnesota that's passed a formal resolution or taken a vote requesting bonding authority or, you know, taking some kind of formal step endorsing this technology?
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hornstein. Duluth City Council didn't renew those for this year yet. The Duluth City Council is supportive of this and passed a resolution. The University of Minnesota Duluth, at least the chancellor there, also sent a letter of support. Duluth altogether, which is another bill, and that would be for the certification facility, has the most organized support from all the different units involved, because that's for another bill. I don't want to get off track, but there's a public safety certification facility that needs to be built, and that city has the most support for that, all put together and organized, because the transit authority is also behind it up there as well.
And then, just one last
piece
on this. So there are, like, formal votes that have been taken and official resolutions from the city of Duluth or that I think they're on the public record.
Representative Hornstein, it's my understanding that was a formal vote. I recall a resolution. Before we come back, we're not going to actually vote on this today because we're running out of time. We want to finish our presentation, but I'll have documents of that before we do. That
would be great. Thank you.
My memory tells me it was an actual vote. I actually got a resolution from the city of Duluth, and actually I'm going to be asking them to renew that for this year.
Thank you.
Council Member, did you have something
well,
to say to
that? Our city has not taken any formal action on it, although there are four neighborhoods in my ward that have passed resolutions supporting the concept of personal rapid transit.
There are no other questions of the council member. Did you wish to have Mr. Anderson now?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. Maury Anderson with Taxi 2000.
Mr. Anderson, welcome. It's always good to hear from a guy named Maury.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was thinking the same thing, actually. It's always good to address...
Please say that good name on the tape there.
Mr. Chair, members, I am Maury Anderson, and I am the CEO of Taxi 2000, which is a Minnesota-based company in Fridley. And I want to just very briefly talk to the bill itself. More and more cities are being confronted by the needs to look at transportation issues differently than via the traditional modes. And there probably are a number of circumstances that evolve in that regard. Dean has talked about one of those in terms of the high-density areas where land use options are really limited or restricted. There are probably also situations where you have unique development areas where the planning is to make the development very pedestrian friendly but accessible as well. There are other options as well to minimize or to maximize redevelopment by eliminating parking and auto access. And there are also connectivity issues where, in fact, PRT could be a good connectivity piece to an existing corridor or an existing transit system. And then I think there are also situations that are just unique utilization of that. And if you take those areas and look at that in the context of Minnesota cities, you could find... besides the Minneapolis situation, the 494 corridor area, which is in fact looking at PRT, Maple Grove has certainly interest in the unique downtown area. They would be interested in PRT. Edina actually has bonding authority to use something as an alternative method, as long as it is not a rail-based system. They got special legislation, I think, in 1986 or somewhere in that time period. They are also looking at it in terms of the redevelopment aspects of it. The connectivity piece could be the Bloomington Central project, and I'm actually going to be talking to those folks in a couple of weeks. So if you look at it in the context of Minnesota cities, and I should also say probably just an absolute unique situation would be Rochester Mayo Clinic. And so you can look at all of those, and each one of those communities have expressed some interest in moving forward on a PRT-type proposal. And actually, I think three of those are really under active consideration currently, besides the Duluth and the training facility and certification facility. So I think the legislation is timely in that regard, and it's timely in another regard as well. If we had been here 3 years ago, we would probably be in a situation, if you ask us, is the technology ready to go? Can we put this, actually run PRT somewhere? I think our answer would have been a lot more hesitant than it is today. The fact of the matter is that somewhere before you adjourn this session, there will be an announcement of a PRT project actually developed. That will either be Heathrow Airport in London, or it will be in the city of Dubai in the United Arab Emirates. They will make one of them will make a decision before you are out of here in May about building a PRT system. It will be the first PRT system in the world, operational, probably with a three-year development time period. So it is timely to consider this legislation, and it would be really nice, I think, if the Minnesota legislature were on the leading edge of providing this kind of legislative opportunity to cities as opposed to waiting and being on the trailing edge. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Questions for Mr. Anderson? Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Anderson. You mentioned this Dubai and London Heathrow is the first system in the world. Isn't there a system at the West Virginia University or that's been around for since the 70s or something like that?
Mr. Anderson?
Mr. Chairman.
That qualifies that PRT?
Yeah, right. You're talking about the Morgantown system.
Yeah.
One can argue whether that's really a PRT or a group system. It is a little bit larger than what one would call a real, true personal rapid transit system, with a significant larger footprint. So it's probably more of an automated people mover somewhere between light rail and PRT, although it does get some credit as being the first PRT system. But if you look at it, it's pretty big and cumbersome.
Any other questions for Mr. Anderson? If not, Representative Olson, further
Any comment? Further questions at all, Mr. Chair, members? I appreciate your going past time here. We had three bills carry over from this morning and didn't intend to go this late, but I really appreciate your patience. I had another bill that was introduced today, and we have some things to work out as to which one we're going to go forward. We added some things to it. If there's no further questions on this bill, we're just going to hold this over until we have a chance to bring the other bill in, and one or the other will make an effort and hopefully have your support to move it out of the committee. If there's no further questions, I'll ask if this bill be held over.
Seeing no further discussion or questions, we will hold the bill over for consideration later. Thank you, gentlemen, Representative Olson. And are we ready to adjourn?
Yes, we are. If there's no objection,
we're adjourned.